It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on the first day of a brand new month, and not just any month, it's our anniversary month here at the Horn. Yes, indeed, it is the first day of October 2020, and this month we move into what we hope, no reason to think otherwise, I don't think, believe. There's that word. This will be 15 years in this format, and a total of more than 17 behind the mic since I got back to the broadcasting business in 2003 with the help of Dr. Bill O'Brien. Yeah, that's a pretty big damn deal. And around the 24th will actually be the anniversary date. Hi, I'm Bob, and every program here at the Horn, the reason we've been here so long is because of your determination to keep the program going. And for that, I thank you, Agnes thanks you, and, the entire Horn Family Community Congregation can pat itself on the back, especially the ones who do keep it going. Thanks to our subscribers for the first day of the month. Thank you to Joseph, and thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you very kindly to Tom in sunny San Rafael. Thank you, Rusty. And thank you very, very kindly to Shorty in L.A. Thank you very much for all that you do to keep the program on the air. So being as how it is the first day of a new month, that means thanks going out to our buddy Laborman and Ralphs, who make possible... Bruce's Memorial Challenge. We begin every month with a matching offer, courtesy of Gary and Ralphs, to get the month off to a good start. So if we can raise the evening's $200, well, there we go. We will be off and running, in good stead for the beginning of the month itself. $200 is on the table, offered to match $200 that come in, and hopefully that'll happen this evening, because it really is an important way to get things off and going in good order for each beginning of the month. So thank you very kindly for that. It'd be great to wipe it out in the first hour or so, if possible, but if not, whatever we can do to get it going. Let's see. Bob! You know what that means. On this day back in 1908, the Model T rolled out, and it was advertised as an affordable car for the masses, as its price tag was only $850, or $17,000 in today's dollars. Henry Ford having realized, up until that time, automobiles being even more brutally expensive, and Henry Ford having realized, with all the flaws that certainly attended his life, and God knows they were legion, Henry Ford realized that if his workers could not afford to buy one of his cars, he would never succeed. Well, Joey notes, Trump thinks he's a Model T, but the T in Model T does not stand for Trump. And the only model in his life is his wife, melanoma. Donald Trump is more like an Edsel, which was a disaster and failure for Ford. Just like Donald, most people hated that car. And Donald's a disaster for the United States of America, and most people despise him. The New York Times back in 1957 stated that the Edsel became synonymous with bold and bad ideas again, just like Donald, bold and bad ideas. The Edsel was marketed as the car that was capable of ending the Cold War and getting the hot girl all in the same day. At this point, Donald just might start a hot war and could probably only get a cold girl with COVID from one of his rallies. You may have seen video, I'll add editorially, of his Clavering rally in Minnesota last night, in which he harangued, because he is, after all, the harangutan, he harangued an audience that was not even from Ilhan Omar's district, asking them, "What were you thinking? Why did you elect this woman?" When the gang of mostly, entirely mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks who were white, it probably not two in that entire crowd came from her district. Anyway, Joey says rumors were, back in the day, the Edsels were built and shipped to dealers with notes explaining that parts were missing, and then the final note would say, "Don't worry, we'll have the rest of the parts in 2 weeks." And this is how Donald got the idea of running his businesses. For instance, the planes in his airlines would be sent to the airports with some of the parts missing, and Donald would have a note attached, "Wings in 2 weeks." Trump made Clara Peller a star, as the legend goes, when he sent her some Trump meats that, well, you know, didn't have any meat in the package. Clara Peller called the company and yelled, "Where's the beef?" This is all a joke, remember. Of course, Clara went on to star in numerous Wendy's commercials after that. Then there was the Trump vodka that lasted about 2 weeks here in the States, but Putin and Russians just loved it. A reminder, again, Trump introduced it, Trump brand vodka shortly after Putin introduced over in Mother Russia, Putinka vodka. It's not a joke. No. However, Joey continues, the Trump Kool-Aid is a big hit here in the U.S. as the maggots are still drinking the Kool-Aid, but they're wondering what happened to their order of bleach. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, "We need a Ford, not a Cadillac, healthcare plan, but a new affordable Model T-type plan that will provide a vehicle to low-cost single-payer health care for the masses, just like Henry Ford provided with his Model T, because right now health care is just a real thorn in the side. You can trust me. Giraffe the giraffe. When I tell you health care is one business Donald Trump has never had, and he won't have it in 2 weeks. So before we're all too weak, go vote and push the party to a progressive program." This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the first day of October, with Giraffe being a good role model right down to the T. Ah, you see what he did there, down to the T? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That Giraffe, he's a clever one. He is indeed. And Scott in San Diego says, given Henry Ford's strong affinity for all things Nazi, it's ironic that his Model T's only came in black. Or maybe it's just me. Could be the goddamned heat in San Diego right now. It's hotter than Chernobyl piss. Don't rub it in. We barely got up into the 60s today here in almost level West by cold Trump Jinjistan. Here in the studio, it is all of 73 degrees. Comfortable enough, I should add, for what will probably be one of the few remaining editions of Naked Radio. Mm-hmm. Cowbell for Joey, hot war and cold girl. That courtesy of Billable Rick. Thank you, Billable. That was clever. And since Joey gets us off started on this Thorn in the Side Thursday with a healthcare anecdote, I've got one to add and share. Now, we know that mental health care is nothing if not a hot mess in this country. And that's for the people who are lucky enough to be able to access it. The discipline is, the science is in still in its infancy. 100 years ago or so, doctors were still pulling the teeth of mental health patients because they believed that teeth contributed to mental illness, and then along came the lobotomy and, well, various and sundry, well, for instance, the Allegheny Mental Health Center that was built here in West Virginia was actually a model for its day. But within a couple of years, if that long, of opening, it was sorely overcrowded. And all the good intentions went out the window. And, well, mental health sanatoriums, whatever, it became a word for institutionalized torment. But progress has been made. It's been made in terms of the delivery of mental health services, and more so in the developed world that isn't the United States. But just to give you an idea of what it's like, I have said, and this is also a kind of a sad anniversary, too, this October the 1st, sad and happy at the same time. It was exactly a year ago today that our son went all to pieces for a variety of reasons and wound up not getting mental health care, but instead being stuffed in the regional jail for 30 days. And he is still recovering from that. I got up this morning and played Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver, as I went over to pick him up as he worked off the midnight shift. Supposedly, he has 2 whole days off now, and I've told him that if he answers his phone, that I will be extremely unhappy, because I might actually get a Saturday off, a weekend day off. Imagine. I know, I'm being selfish, right? And so, with that having been said, along the way, I, this is also a pandemic year, so I reached out. I thought, hey, some counseling would probably do me good, just to keep everything in perspective and where it needs to be. I'm not looking for any meds or anything. I'm just looking to work through some things, talk through some things. So I reached out to the clinic that is down in Charleston, that is run by my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, and explained to them, you know, hi, I'm one of the 27 million people in this country who can't have either Medicaid or Affordable Care Act insurance. And I found, and what they explained to me is that counseling, okay, so-called therapy, would run me $400 for the first session, payable in cash up front on the barrel head. We're not going to bill you, you little bastard. We want the money now. And it, by the way, you can guarantee that that's not the rate that a health insurance provider or Medicaid or Medicare pays, for that matter. That's just the premium that you pay for being one of the 27 million elect in this country. But wait, there's more. Each additional one-hour session would again be $300 cash on the barrel head. So if you assume maybe one session per week, that first month would come to something like, let's see, $1,600. And then each additional month would be $1,200. Suffice to say, there will be no mental health counseling in my life. No. Just no. So that's one aspect of it. Now let's add in another aspect. And in order to do this properly, let's go back in time a bit. In the 20th century, in the mid-20th century, an émigré from Russia who had fled the Bolshevik Revolution, I think her parents were actually pharmacists, she came to the United States and was amazed by the tall buildings that she saw when the ship came sailing into New York Harbor. There stood Lady Liberty on Liberty Island, her lamp alight astride the golden door, something like that. And the Russian girl looked at the tall buildings, and to her, they were the spires of cathedrals. And the titans of industry, the capitalists who had caused their construction, were themselves the high priests, bishops, and archbishops of the religion of capitalism. And so she formulated a philosophy. And that philosophy said that greed was good, that avarice was admirable, and that philanthropy was for, well, to use the modern-day parlance, was and generosity was for suckers and losers, and that we should all be dedicated to grabbing with both fists all we can while we can, and that the government had no business whatsoever taking care of the citizenry. That it simply was not good government for the government to care about we the people. And people far and wide eventually began to sit at her feet and ponder and caress her hairy toes. And she gave a name to this philosophy. And by the way, one of the people who sat at her feet and pondered and caressed her hairy toes would go on to become the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. His name is Alan Greenspan. But there were many others. And they called her philosophy of greed and avarice and self-centeredness and pitiless acquisition and capitalism became known as objectivism. And it was manifested in a series of really bad proto-science fiction novels that she authored over the years. The most well-known one being a thick, terrible tome, practically unreadable, called Atlas Shrugged. By now, you have probably figured out that I am talking about no less than Ayn Rand. A-Y-N R-A-N-D. If the RAND part of it strikes a chord, that is because a Texas physician named his kid after her. I'm speaking, of course, of libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul. Her economic so-called theories became so popular in right-wing and libertarian circles that back when he was a member of the House of Representatives, young representative, Wisconsin, Janesville, Wisconsin representative, Paul Eddie Munster Ryan, used to make his interns, impressionable young things that they were, read Atlas Shrugged, which I would think would be a form of abuse. Proof that Paul Eddie Munster Ryan never actually read Atlas Shrugged lies in the fact that it has some really weird sex scenes. And, of course, he was a family values Republican until it came to the kinky parts of Atlas Shrugged. Ayn Rand's real name? Alyssa Zinovievna Rosenbaum. And as I've remarked on the program before, say whatever you will about the Bolsheviks, but they figured out a way not to have to live with Ayn Rand. She tormented Gary Cooper, Ayn Rand did, and the director of The Fountainhead, trying to tell the one and only Gary Cooper how to deliver one of the interminable monologues that is salted throughout her novels. Well, the denouement to Ayn Rand is that later in life, having spent a lifetime declaring that that government programs such as Medicare, Social Security, were naked attempts to turn the United States from being a capitalist wonderland into a communist dictatorship. Well, it was 1974 when, after having spent her lifetime honking on cigarettes, and by the way, what is this for me? This is day 17 without a cigarette for me. But she got lung cancer in 1974 and had surgery. 1976, she quit writing her weird-ass, hateful newsletter. And then, a woman, a social worker who worked for her lawyer, the social worker's name, Eva Pryor, because, of course, when you scratch one of these economic conservatives, you quickly uncover a raging hypocrite. And so it was that she told Eva Pryor, "Yes, go ahead, enroll me in this Social Security and Medicare socialist program, so that I too may collect many of the American dollars that I am to which I am entitled, because after all, I am genius." And so, from roughly 1976 to her death in 1982, she suckled away at the public teat, utterly oblivious to the, well, uncaring, really. She was just pushing forward her idea of get what you can while you can. And so she reached out with both hands and grabbed her a big old handful of socialism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She is buried at the Kensico Cemetery in Valhalla, New York. No irony there. Dum-da-da-da, yeah, Alan Greenspan showed up at the funeral, too. And a six-foot-long floral arrangement in the shape of a dollar sign was propped up next to the box that held the rotten remains of her rotten life. All of that is prologue to the following story. Because, well, it was the first thing I thought of when I read it. A number of folks on social media pointed this out to me because they thought I would get a giggle out of it. And, in fact, yeah, I did. Maybe it makes me a bad person, but I did. I giggled a lot. Enter a guy named Bob Murray. Now, Bob Murray is the principal of a dirty, filthy, rotten, polluting, poisoning coal group called Murray Energy. It was out at the Crandall Canyon mine in Utah that he got a number of miners killed and their rescuers. Because, well, they were doing something, and Murray denies this to this day, but it's almost incontrovertible. They were pulling pillars. What that means is when you've mined out everything a mine has, on the way out, you engage in this filthy, dangerous process because as you've mined inwards, you've left pillars of coal to hold the roof up, otherwise known among underground coal miners as the top. And you do that so that the mountain above will not come down onto the mountain below. Well, the miners were ordered to pull pillars, and they were pulling pillars when the mountain came down on top of them. That's why it's generally illegal to do. Nonetheless, Bob Murray denied that they were pulling pillars and instead said that earthquake that could only be felt by me, Bob Murray. Is what caused that disaster. Yeah, sure. You bet, Bob. And he was famously skewered by a talking squirrel and John Oliver after Bob Murray tried and failed to sue HBO and John Oliver for actually giving real facts about Bob Murray. And along the way, when Nitwit Nero came down the
Golden Escalator,
when he came down the Golden Escalator to declare his presidential candidacy, people like Bob Murray, and Bob Murray was one of them, were there waiting with their checkbooks out, and they pumped millions of dollars into his campaign. Because, after all, Nitwit Nero stood in the Civic Center in Charleston, West Virginia, and mimed a shoveling motion while wearing a hard hat to indicate to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that he was a friend of Coe. Well, in the last 4 years, more coal miners have lost their jobs under Trump than lost their jobs under, the Kenyan Muslim usurper who was running a war on coal. Yeah, I remember that phrase in those heady days of racist stupidity that ran like wildfire all over the country, and particularly in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, Bob Murray is, well, he's bankrupt. and he claims he's almost out of money. Gave all that money to Donald Trump just to have Donald Trump treat him like the chump Bob Murray was and is. Because whatever, we know that Donald Trump doesn't know what he doesn't know, but the things he does know, he knows all the way down to his toenails. And he certainly knows one of W.C. Fields' three commandments, and that is, well, he probably knows all three. One, you can't cheat an honest man. Two, never give a sucker an even break. And three, don't smarten up a chump. And so he decidedly did not smarten up Bob Murray. And Bob Murray poured the money into Donald Trump. And Donald Trump just laughed and laughed because he knew Cole wasn't coming back. That's the kind of thing that only suckers and losers believe. And so here in almost level West by Cole Trump Juniustan, where they ran to the polls in the Democratic primary to vote for Bernie Sanders, that really happened. And then in the general election, they ran to the or knuckle walked to the polls to vote for Donald Trump. Well, there's a whole bunch of out of work coal miners. Their jobs aren't coming back because the coal's not coming back because coal doesn't spontaneously reproduce in the bowels of the earth. No, it just doesn't. And once you've blown up a mountain, it's blown up forever. We've learned that to our chagrin with over 500 of some of the most ancient and beautiful mountains on planet Earth. But Bob Murray is in, I guess, what we would call the twilight of his life here on the planet that he has squandered and wasted in the pursuit of filthy lucre. You might recall back when Bishop Willard Romney and Paul Eddie Munster Ryan were running against Obama and Biden in 2012, you might recall that Bob Murray required his workers to serve as stage props for Bishop Willard as he, Bishop Willard, got on the stump and lied about how Obama had started a war on coal. When in fact, coal was being replaced at a rather heady clip by frack gas, that other nightmare extractive practice that threatens the ability of the planet to support life on Earth. Yeah. And so, one of the other things that Bob Murray did along the way. Well, Bob Murray, every time a regulation that would protect a coal miner's life came along, and while I have a hate-hate relationship with coal and the coal industry, I do maintain a certain amount of sympathy for the people who are suckered into working for it. And so my sympathies go out because I have known people who have had their lives and careers and fortunes and families ruined by coal. It wasn't long ago we were talking about Don Blankenship, who was acquitted by a jury of his peers in federal court of ripping off the shareholders, and that would have been a felony. But he was convicted of playing fast and loose with the mining safety regulations, such that 29 men were incinerated at Upper Big Branch around Easter several years ago. They were incinerated by a gas explosion in the Upper Big Branch mine down in western Raleigh County. And they were so badly incinerated that the rescue crews walked right past them and then didn't realize that they were walking past things that had once been human beings. Yeah. And families still suffer to this day. They drive around with decals on pickup trucks in memory of and the name and the year of birth and the date of death. And the date of death is the Upper Big Branch disaster. Grandchildren, spouses, brothers, cousins, aunts, uncles, even parents. Yeah. Well, there was at least a little tiny bit of justice for Don Blankenship, because Don Blankenship had to do a whole year for incinerating those 29 miners. And people like Don Blankenship and people like Bob Murray went screaming into the halls of Congress and of state legislatures every time some lawmaker would introduce a bill to try to keep more miners from dying of things like coal workers' pneumoconiosis, otherwise known as black lung, or keep them from being incinerated or crushed. During the pandemic, one of the things that just gave me a howling case of the fantods was the news that came out several months ago that explained that because of the pandemic, mine inspectors in West Virginia were working from home virtually. Now, there are a lot of things you can do in terms of virtual work. Inspecting coal mines ain't one of them. But yeah, the mine inspectors were working from home because there's a deadly pandemic. But the coal miners and the coal mines were still working because, after all, digging coal was deemed an essential industry because the governor of the state of West Virginia is a coal baron. Mm-hmm. And so, so that means the mines went largely uninspected, and we're lucky we haven't had a massive mine disaster during the pandemic. But that brings us back to Bob Murray. I don't know if John Oliver's show is live right now or if he's on vacation. But my God, if he's working this weekend, you can almost bet your ass that this story will show up Sunday night on Last Week Tonight. Because Bob Murray, who worked hammer and tongs, hand over fist, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, year after year after year, to defeat any piece of legislation that would benefit the health and well-being and safety of coal miners, including the ones he employed, including the ones who got black lung and were caused to stop breathing. Bob Murray has filed for black lung benefits. Yeah, I know. Isn't that just something? A journalism outfit called the Ohio Valley Resource, which is partnered with West Virginia Public Broadcasting, found the form he had submitted. Bob Murray wrote, "I founded the company and created 8,000 jobs there until the move to end coal use." Funny, he didn't say Obama war on coal. "I'm still chairman of the board. We're in bankruptcy, and due to my health, could not handle the president and CEO job any longer." "Well, retire, you fucker. Wait, what's the matter? Don't you have a stock portfolio? I mean, we wouldn't want to give you something like black lung benefits, Bob, because, believe me, then you'd just lay around in your welfare hammock and not be productive, Bob. Go ask your buddy Lindsey Graham about all that." And so, At 80 years old now, Bob Murray says he's heavily dependent on an oxygen tank and he says he's near death. I generally try not to go down this road, but I'm having a hard time working up a sad about that. He's filed for his black lung benefits against North American Coal Corporation. That's one of the potentially liable parties. He says he was employed by them from May 1957 to October 1987. Started out as a miner and then became president. And then became president and operator of Ohio Valley Resources. And then he founded in 1988 Murray Energy. And promptly drove it into the ground. Get it? Coal, mining, drove it into the ground. Yeah, don't try this at home. But he says he's got black lung from working in underground coal mines. Why didn't you wear your respirator, Bob? Because respirators are... long before there was a cult dedicated to resisting wearing masks during a pandemic, there's a culture in the coal industry, because science has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that wearing a respirator while working in a coal mine, which is far, our buddy laborman, Gary, out in New Mexico, could tell you that a respirator filters a lot of dust. And the Mine Safety and Health Administration has proven scientifically that you can reduce the amount of coal dust that you breathe into your lungs, which eventually destroys your lungs and becomes black lung, by wearing your respirator. But in coal mines, and in particular in non-union coal mines, there's a fatalistic cult of machismo that says, I ain't going to wear that sissy respirator. My granddaddy mined coal, and he died a-gasping for breath in his bed of the black lung. And my daddy mined coal, and he died in his bed a-gasping for breath of the black lung. And I ain't going to dishonor neither of them suffering by wearing that sissy mask. That sissy respirator. I want to die a-gagging on my own sputum just like my daddy and my granddaddy done. Black lung is a horrible death. And I would argue that if Bob Murray has made it to 80, it's a pretty good bet he doesn't have it. Because I'll bet you Bob Murray wore his respirator. And you have to understand that in a place like, say, Charleston, the state capital, there are lots of lawyers who serve as lobbyists for the coal industry. And ever since black lung benefits were created, my grandmother drew a tiny little black lung survivor's benefit check till the day she died, because black lung took from her beloved husband too early, and she spent, good God, something near 30 years without a husband because of black lung. Black lung was known about all the way back to the 1920s. By the coal industry. But they covered it up and covered it up and covered it up. And any time a miner said that breathing coal dust had made him sick, the coal company doctor would be there to say, nah, it's because you smoke. There's a certain amount of irony involved in the fact that one of the first industries to recognize the dangers of smoking was actually the coal industry, as a means of trying to deflect liability from what coal dust did to human lungs. Yeah. And so there are entire office towers full of lawyers. One of the firms is Jackson and Kelly down in Charleston. They got busted a few years back for trying to dummy up black lung records to keep people who really had black lung from getting their benefits. And they were successful. No lawyers were harmed in the discovery of that information, by the way. But every time a minor files for black lung, a phalanx of lawyers swings into action to try to make sure that that minor cannot receive those benefits. And Bob Murray and Murray Energy hired lawyers to do exactly that. One wonders if these coal companies that he's claiming were responsible for his black lung will lawyer up and fight his claim the same way that they did ordinary rank-and-file miners. Now, the Ohio Valley Resource reached out to Murray. Murray took the call, but he wouldn't agree to an on-the-record interview. But he did threaten to sue them if they published a story that gave the actual facts that he had spent a lifetime fighting black lung benefits. And of course, the goddess of irony is always at work in all of this. It was October 2019, you know, just last year, when Bob Murray gave an interview to NPR about his breathing troubles. And in October 2019, he told NPR, "It's idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, IPF. Idiopathic means a disease of unknown causation. "It's idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, IPF, and it's not related to my work in the industry. They've checked me for that, and it's not has anything to do with working in the coal mines, which I did for 17 years, underground every day. And until I was 76, I went underground twice a week." Funny how a year can make all the difference in the world. After those 17 years underground every day, and until he was 76 underground at least twice a week, and up to 2019, it never caused black lung. But apparently, when he quit going underground, and he declared bankruptcy, and Donald J. Trump destroyed his industry, well, suddenly it was time to get on the old black lung gravy train. Because, see, coal companies treated black lung benefits like they were some sort of welfare benefits for malingering layabout lazy ass miners who just didn't want to work no more. Yeah. So Bob Murray, hypocrite, fitting and rightful heir to the hypocrisy of Ayn Rand, gets pride of place on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And just in case you were wondering whether maybe it was a, you know, a little kind of, you know, maybe he'd fought, maybe he didn't. No, it was 2014 when Bob Murray's Murray Energy was at the forefront of a lawsuit against the Obama administration because the Obama administration had been engaged in trying to craft a federal rule that would make coal dust less of a deadly issue in underground coal mines. And the rule cut back on the amount of allowable coal dust exposure for miners. And so Bob Murray and his company went to court, barking and howling about how unnecessary the regulations were. He's, among other things, a climate change denier. Yeah. And along the way, and it's kind of weird, you wouldn't think it, it's counterintuitive, but it turns out to be true. It's not just underground miners. In 2020, the miners that remain, some of the ones who have the most virulent and toxic forms of black lung, lo and behold, they're on, they're working on mountaintop removal sites. They never go underground. Gosh, Bob Murray. Well, it couldn't and shouldn't happen to a nicer guy. Yeah. And so some thanks are going out. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island getting us started on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. We got $175 to go on that now. Thank you very kindly, Charlene. Hopefully some folks will jump in beside you and we'll knock the rest of that out. Oh, dear, dear Bob, says Steve in New York. We already thought you were a bad person. I'm a bad man. Back to the mental health issue. Matt in San Francisco says, you already know my contempt for Ronnie Reagan surrounding his response to HIV/AIDS. My contempt, however, reaches back even further, back to when he was governor of California, when he cut mental health services. Anyone can Google what resulted. However, for me, it was more personal. Matt continues, I was raised by a mother who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and other issues. As a child, I remember mental health professionals coming to the home, doing an evaluation, and most times committing my mother to an institution for treatment. Many times a person suffering from mental illness finds it difficult to continue taking their meds. We know a little bit about that here. You know, it's kind of hard when you take nighttime meds to hold your mental illness at bay, and you can't take them, can't take your meds because you're working the midnight shift at the Rippy Mart. Well, those problems can manifest fairly quickly. As a teenager, Matt continues, and young adult, after Reagan sliced state budgets, it was the police that arrived and they had to figure out what was going on. I became really good at staging things in order to ensure the conclusion they came to was that she was a danger to herself or to others and could be put on a 5150 hold for at least 72 hours. Getting treatment for someone struggling with mental illness takes a mental health toll on everyone involved. Adding the police to the equation just heightens the trauma to new levels. So thanks, Ronnie. Thanks for continually making policy that caused so many citizens of this country additional suffering. Signed, Matt in San Francisco. And, you know, after he fucked California, it's worth remembering that the old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, took his show on the road. And it was during his presidency that publicly funded mental health facilities all over this country began to shutter. It was, and they hid it under the guise of being humane. It wasn't humane at all. They just wanted the Republicans wanted the money that was going into the budgets that maintained these facilities. And they said, no, 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 we don't need to institutionalize people anymore. We need to have them out in the community. And the communities where these hospitals were said, the fuck we do! Because being, you know, good God-fearing, et cetera, they didn't want mentally ill people turned out onto the streets in their communities, but that's exactly what happened. And so just as he had slashed the system in California, well, what was fun for Republicans in California proved to be extra double-plus-good super-duper fun for Republicans across the fruited plain. Yeah, Matt. Thanks, Ronnie. Indeed. Randy in PA says, mental health care and parity. There is an insurance phenomenon called parity, which I believe is currently in effect and hard-fought, and it relates to mental health care thusly. Mental health care is to be billed as any other medical condition. Now, this might be only applicable to Medicare or Medicaid. So if you're on Medicare and you find a mental health professional who takes insurance, the professional must adhere to the Medicare-based payment schedule. Yeah. And that's why if you show up and say, I'm private pay, they go, open up a vein. Yeah. Meanwhile, a note from Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx regarding Atlas Shrugged. This is a novel that should not be tossed aside lightly. It should be thrown with great force. Dorothy Parker, writing on The Fountainhead. As to Bob Murray, Ron in Raleigh says, care to place a wager? Who's going to shuffle off to his long home first? Bob or Rush? Whomever it is, please let it be soon. I don't know that I believe that Flush Flimball has cancer. Or if he does, he is still living proof of just how efficacious our healthcare system can be if you're the right kind of person with the right kind of money. Lee in New York says, it's easy to be sad about Bob Murray's situation. I'm sad that he's using oxygen tanks that could benefit someone else.
Wearing a mask in a coal mine is giving in to the Democrat hoax.
You'd be surprised how long that's been a going argument. Jack in Shreveport, in regard to toe-sucking Alan Greenspan, Jack points out, Alan Greenspan later went so far as to admit that A.N. Randian or supply-side economics was a bunch of hooey. Yeah. Day late and a whole bunch of dollars short. The heroine of Atlas Shrugged, Dagny Taggart. What a great name. Yeah, no. Lee in New York says, considering that in 2016 we had the first major party female candidate for president, and in 2020, likely soon, female vice president, I think about the main female character in Atlas Shrugged, Dagny Taggart. I remembered the character. She was president of her successful company. But this Ayn Rand image of a heroine would give everything up to have the man she admired from afar. Who is John Galt? Exactly what I did not teach my daughters, says Lee in New York. And the irony is that her genius hero created clean, reusable, free energy. So Utopia has a Green New Deal, even if the rest of us don't. As to Rush, James in Illinois says, but the buses are still running. Rand as a philosophical force? What? Says Irwin in Montana. I belong to a Facebook philosophical group. There's always a dumbass who brings up Ayn Rand as some kind of philosophical genius. I have to tell them how you just described her, but not with specifics. Now I know more specifics. Thanks. Oh, you're welcome, Irwin. Yeah, don't put up with that bullshit for a second. Bob Murray, Billable Rick says, I wonder if Bill Murray, Bill in quotes, kind of like Herb Cain, was in the crowd at the September 13th, 2011 CNN Tea Party Express Republican debate in Tampa, Florida, when Ron Paul was asked whether society should let uninsured people die for lack of health care. Yep, you remember that, don't you? Ron Paul said, what, do you want to just let them die in the hallways? And the Republicans, the birchers, deathers, baggers, booger eaters, libertarians, ninthers, deathers, tenthers, they just clapped and cheered. Yay, dying in the hallway, yay!
because that's who Republicans are.
I imagine some back then were probably, some of the people cheering and yelling back then are probably members of the Lincoln Project now.
Yeah.
Billable Rick says, my heart really goes out to Bill, much like Dick Cheney likes to take hearts out of decent people. Ooh. That gets you a cowbell, Billable Rick. Indeed, indeed. At the same time, says Ron in Raleigh, talk about a double whammy. When Ronnie started shuttering mental health facilities, he also pulled all funding for federally financed housing. No mental health facilities and no housing. And people still believe that greasy-headed old fool is the best thing since sliced bread. Fuck me a-running. I know. And from time to time, those folks over there on my filthy morning habit will get particularly one of them will get all misty-eyed when he starts remembering the heady days of when America was really great and Ronald Reagan was president. That's usually about the time that I change the channels over to the Three Stooges. It's much more intellectually stimulating. Well, as you can see, Thorn in the Side Thursday, I know, there's other stuff, you know, the usual, but that Bob Murray story just, well, it kind of warmed the cockles of my heart. I don't even know what a cockle is and where it resides in the heart. I don't know if it's in the upper chamber, the lower, the left, the right, but they're warm. They're definitely warm right now. And thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend who has just knocked out some more of today's challenge. Thank you very kindly. That takes us down to 125 bucks to go for the evening. Thank you very kindly. And by the way, Flavio has been worrying all afternoon, and rightfully so. La Crosse, Wisconsin, and Green Bay, Wisconsin, are two parts of that state that is burning up with the Rona. Flavio said earlier, I woke up this morning to the glad tidings that Trump is coming to La Crosse on Saturday. Oh, joy. I'd just like to say that La Crosse County is largely Democratic, and his supporters are a loud and obnoxious minority. Hopefully, the hillbilly Nuremberg rally will be confined to a hangar at the airport. The fucker still owes the city from when he visited last in 2016. I'm staying inside on Saturday. Hopefully, the sulfurous stench will dissipate by Sunday. Oh, if the maggots are moving, there's no mask enough to you stay inside and, I don't know, and put extra filtration on the air conditioner filter. But then Flavio followed up. Breaking! We've been spared! La Crosse Trump rally moved to Janesville hours after mayor asks to cancel. Janesville. Funny how I mentioned that just a few moments ago. I don't reckon Paul Eddie Munster Ryan lives in Janesville anymore. That's way too recherché for him. But from the La Crosse Tribune today, Olivia Harkin writes, the president was scheduled for back-to-back rallies in La Crosse and Green Bay on Saturday, and both Cabot, who is the mayor of Tim Cabot, the mayor of La Crosse, and Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich, were urging the campaign to change plans. Yeah. Because they'd really like to not have a bunch of people die in their cities. And moreover, overwhelm their healthcare system. Mayor Cabot said he reached out to the Trump campaign Thursday morning and asked them to cancel or postpone the event. The maggots said, well, there will be proper precautions taken. Courtney Perella, Deputy National Press Secretary, dirtbag for the White House, said,
Americans are enthusiastic for President Trump's reelection, and they want to and have a right to gather under the First Amendment to hear from the President of the United States.
Yeah, but not under the First Amendment, but not behind a mask.
For the president's outdoor events in Wisconsin, like his other campaign events, everyone attending will receive a temperature check, be provided a mask they're encouraged to wear, and have access to plenty of hand sanitizer.
And straws, because they can drink the hand sanitizer. Because they're maggots. Hospitals in Green Bay and the Fox Valley area are both overwhelmed or feeling that way. Some are near capacity. Wisconsin just reported its largest amount of deaths in a single day. 22% positivity rate in La Crosse County. La Crosse County has 1,119 active cases.
But, you know, the maggot administration doesn't care.
Because it is a psychopath administration. Republican State Senate candidate Dan Kopanky said that a baseball stadium that he leases from the city for his baseball team, the La Crosse Loggers, Copeland Park, was briefly in consideration as a possible new location after the airport fell through.
The Trump team reached out to me to see if Copeland Park would be available to host.
So they're going to Janesville instead. Oh, lucky Janesville. No. Hide, Janesville, hide. Do like Flavio. Stay inside. Put towels under the door. Do whatever you can to make sure that the maggots cannot spread their bioterror to you. Okay. Randy in PA says, I think a cockle is around shellfish. I think, yeah, cockles and mussels alive, alive, oh. Sure, that song. What the hell is it doing in anybody's heart? Ah, how about that? There's the answer Ron and Raleigh providing us, so you won't worry. The cockles of the heart are its ventricles, named by some in Latin as cochlei cordis, from cochlea, snail, alluding to their shape. The saying means to warm and gratify one's deepest feelings. Now we know what the cockle is. It's the ventricle. And somehow it just doesn't have the same je ne sais quoi of saying it warms the ventricles of my heart. Because actually, ventricles pretty much have to stay roughly the same temperature, or shit goes sideways in a real hurry. Yeah. Okay, so economics, Steve in New York says, I have to tell you that I think it's time for a horn discussion of economics to better understand exactly what supply-side and demand-side philosophy is. The dirty little secret is that there is evidence of demand causing supply and supply causing demand. Within economics, there's no such thing as supply-side economics or demand-side economics. The term trickle-down has nothing to do with economics any more than a political dog whistle. Perhaps I'm being a jerk, but I've always been of the opinion that we on the left should be adept at understanding economics and be able to explain it, at least in general terms. I agree. And to the same extent that, yeah, we need to know a little bit about, not the same thing, but it's the same idea. We need to be a little bit more literate, you know, about our firearms. So that the maggots and the National Ruble Association turds can't say, you said clip instead of magazine. It's not a gun, it's a firearm. It's just a two. It's in the Constitution. Take that away from them, and then their arguments are a hell of a lot harder to make. Same thing with economics. Protection from COVID, Steve adds. There in Janesville, will they be handing out gallon jugs with blessed blood in it so they can be washed in the blood of the Lord? Well, it'll be Trump brand ketchup, but, well, what do you... Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, therein lies the filibobster. And God, there's a bunch more stuff. As I worked earlier, sat around earlier today, I had to do a lot of waiting on Ferg stuff. We have this, and this is just a little food non-porn moment, but it actually has more meaning because think places like this have more impact on our lives than some of the issues we talk about and treat as quite serious here on the program. Steve in New York directed my attention to this BBC story. Over in Ireland, because they still try to have a functional government, so it's not here. But over in Ireland, a franchisee of Subway, who was taxed at a value-added tax at a higher rate, because 16 is higher than zero. The Irish government slapped a value-added tax on the bread they serve at Subway. And the bread they serve at Subway in Ireland is not much, if at all, different from the bread you get at your local Subway. As Steve pointed out, I've known this for a long time. The Irish government has pointed out that the bread at Subway isn't bread. No, because bread, under the Irish regulations, is not subject to value-added taxation because it is deemed a staple good. But when what you are passing off to the public is in fact 10% sugar or something related to sugar, like, say, maltodextrin or high-fructose corn syrup, well, the Irish hold to the opinion that you're not selling bread anymore. You're selling something, maybe some sort of fluffy grain-based candy or cake, but it ain't bread. The Irish VAT Act of 1972 says that sugar and fat should not exceed 2% of the weight of flour in the dough. Well, that cannot be said of Subway's bread. A spokesperson for Subway said, "Subway's bread is, of course, bread." I love the way they threw the "of course" in there. I don't think it logically works. Bookfinders Limited is a Subway franchisee based near Galway. And they found that the judges there found that the sugar content's around 10% of the flour in the dough for both the white and the whole grain rolls. And we'll add this. The whole grain rolls are just, they've just got some coloring. And then there's the other lie from the spokes creep. "We've been baking fresh bread in our stores for more than 3 decades, and our guests return each day for sandwiches made on bread that smells as good as it tastes." Again, those are weasel words. Maybe it does smell as good as it tastes, but I'd say it doesn't taste very good. And no, that's weaselly saying they're baking fresh bread too. Go to any Subway anywhere on earth, and you will not find someone back there turning dough. Why? Because the bread arrives in little frozen lumps, which they then thaw and proof in their proofing ovens until it raises enough to be stuck in the oven and baked. But that's only fresh the way that if you dig up a woolly mammoth from the melting permafrost of, say, the Russian Arctic, and then you cook that woolly mammoth meat over an open flame and serve it to folks and say, here's some fresh woolly mammoth meat. Well, that woolly mammoth has been dead for 15,000 years and been frozen solid. And so it's, I guess, freshly cooked. But it ain't fresh woolly mammoth because there ain't no woolly mammoths. And it looks like Subway is going to lose this round. And so while they will be able to continue calling that crap they put around crap meat in Merca bread and calling the meat meat, I mean, their bacon's turkey, their ham is turkey, their bologna's turkey, their pastrami's turkey. I think just about everything but their turkey is turkey. And then, of course, their turkey is Soylent. We all know that Soylent Green is people. Arnold chiming in. Eat fresh and die. Subway motto. McDonald's rolls are edible foam. Look up Bun Lady Dixon, Tennessee. 2005. Well, I don't even necessarily need to do that, Arnold, because I remember reading the experiment. Maybe it was in Super Size Me. Or maybe it was somewhere else, where a person took a McDonald's cheeseburger, unwrapped it, and left it just out on top of the chest of drawers. It didn't mold, and it didn't rot. That's not food. Because food left unattended molds and rots. Flavio reminds us that we also learned years ago that Subway brand bread also contained, wait for it, plastic! Yep. Known as the yoga mat or doormat chemical. And when they got caught, they did manage to take it out. Of course, that same chemical was in bread at McDonald's and Burger Thing and Wendy's. There's very little pre-produced food out there that you can actually trust to be what it says it is. If you're attempting to eat non-processed foodstuffs, about your only hope is to make it yourself. Ralph's, who provides part of the funding for Bruce's Memorial Challenge, wanted to know, was the first of the month challenge met? No, not yet, Ralph's. We are $125 away from being done with it, and hopefully we'll knock that out in the remainder of the program. Steve says, Subway, on the bright side, Subway did get rid of the plastic foam from floor mats they used to put in it. And that reminds me of the story way back in the early part of this century that the shredded mozzarella cheese at Pizza Hut was, and I kid you not, sprayed with silicone so that it wouldn't clump in the little bins. I don't know if that's still the case or not. Ugh. Oh, and one thing I wanted to bring up, I had meant to bring it up in last night's conversation, and so we're therefore talking about the shit show from Tuesday evening. I was positively stunned as we were driving home from Beckley to hear Chris Wallace utter the following words. Seven of them. Seven words I never expected Chris Wallace to utter. I want to talk about climate change. And that's where that's the point in time where we found out about the forest city. You know,
where the elves, they live in these houses that are built up in the trees. It's literally a forest city.
Yeah. But to hear it actually even included was quite stunning. Of course, Joe Biden spoke temperately about the topic. No. I realize Joe Biden is not anywhere near ideologically pure enough on the issue of climate change. But hopefully him we could drag along. You will not move Donald Trump. Asked about climate change, Donald Trump said,
I want to have the cleanest water and the cleanest air.
That's not climate change. And then he went on to say that his idea of climate change legislation was about making cars more affordable. And the Paris Climate Accords
were a terrible deal for America, believe me. We're supposed to do all these things, but India and China, they're not doing anything.
And just got more and more and more lost. And after a while, I think he was back to babbling about one of Joe Biden's sons. But for me, that was a pretty stark contrast. Work on climate change somehow, or don't work on it at all. That's a pretty stark contrast as far as I'm concerned. The forest city, Steve says, yeah, and there's even one
which is called Lothlorien and has a king and queen who are very powerful. She even has a powerful and magical ring and is able to see into the future by looking into a bowl filled with magic water. But she's not as powerful as me. And, like, she's probably, like, a four tops because, you know, she's really old.
Ron in Raleigh says, you trying to tell me that Twinkies are not food? I'm shocked. Twinkies are the most American of food. Food for the apocalypse. That's true. It will survive a nuclear apocalypse. And speaking of lips, what's the shelf life of a fucking Slim Jim? And did Slim Jims really start out as a proposed dog treat, or is that just an urban legend? I don't know. Thank you, Yuki. Yuki just finished off the rest of Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you so very much. That's tremendous. That means we're off to a decent start for October. And I can't thank you all enough. Oh, we probably need to address this issue. You know that really, really moral, ethical Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett, hashtag Judge Handmaid? Well, according to an article in The Guardian today, it was 2006. She wasn't on the bench yet. And Amy Coney Barrett, as a law professor at Notre Dame, signed off along with hundreds of people in Talibandiana and Michigan, so-called conservatives. She signed a full-page newspaper ad that was sponsored by the St. Joseph County Right to Life that was published in the South Bend Tribune. And in that ad that she signed off on, well, it said, we, the following citizens of Michiana, oppose abortion on demand and defend the right of life from fertilization to natural death. Please continue to pray to end abortion. Natural death? I guess execution by the state includes natural death, because there's no way Amy Coney Barrett would ever say that we should end capital punishment. She never could have been vetted by the Federalist Society had she done so. There was a separate page in the same issue of the South Bend Tribune where the same group said, it's time to put an end to the barbaric legacy of Roe v. Wade and restore laws that protect the lives of unborn children. Of course, we don't give a fuck about the ones that are already born. No, I added that last part. So we know, there's no doubt about it, Amy Coney Barrett is in fact a wild-eyed, radical right-wing extremist who wants to take a constitutional right away from half or more of the citizens of this country. It's not even in dispute anymore. One of the people who she signed off on, she signed off with, St. Joseph County Right to Life, even the pro-life wackos think they're weird. Because St. Joseph County Right to Life says that life begins at fertilization. Not at the moment when the fertilized egg implants into the uterine wall. Or, God knows, not when the fetus becomes viable. So, among other things, St. Joseph County Right to Life is on record as being decidedly opposed to in vitro fertilization for couples who can't have children or individuals who can't have children any other way. Jackie Appleman is the executive director of St. Joseph County Right to Life. And she said, whether embryos are implanted in the woman and then selectively reduced, or it's done in a petri dish and then discarded, you're still ending a new human life at that point, and we do oppose that. We support the criminalization of the doctors who perform abortions, but at this point, we're not supportive of criminalizing the women. You know, at this point. The only question I have about Amy Coney Barrett's decision to sign off on that letter, that radical white wing letter, the only question I have about that is whether she did it of her own free will or whether her husband told her to do it. Or did she seek her husband's permission to do it? You know, of Jesse. Speaking for NARAL Pro-Choice America, the president of that organization, Elise Hoag, said, Trump said he's only nominating justices who will end Roe and criminalize abortion. We take him at his word. This nominee fits the bill. Everything is at stake. But, of course, everything that she espouses is, it has to be cleared through both her husband and the cult she's a member of, People of Praise. Damn, Bob, says Megan. I thought I was the only one thinking Donnie thought we all lived in Middle Earth, too, when I heard him mention forest cities. Does that mean the sinkhole that opened up outside the White House some years back with Sauron coming to take his wayward son home? Ooh. No, that was just a collapse of the less stable parts of Moria. I would not associate a decent villain like Sauron with Donald Trump. He's more, he's more troll, And I'm thinking maybe it was the Balrog that was looking for a troll to snack on. Yeah. Cynthia says, I bought a nice tri-tip at the store earlier today. I intend to slow bake it in my oven to an internal temp of 135 to 140 or so. Normally I'd barbecue it, but the climate change driven wildfires burning out here have the Bay Area under a spare the air alert where barbecues are permitted. Oh, the horror. Maybe if Trump liked good barbecue better than McDonald's or KFC, he'd get on board and fight climate change. There's a thought there. A dear friend of mine of long standing asked me for some advice on how to make the brine for brining and seasoning his 5-pound brisket earlier this afternoon. I was happy to comply. I got it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, Cynthia, but if you run that thing all the way up to 135 or 140 degrees in the oven, covered or not, the carryover cooking's liable to turn it into shoe leather unless you like it that way. I like some pink in my beef roast. And if it was me, I'd be yanking the little bastard at about 118 because the carryover will carry you on up, especially if you wrap it tightly and let it rest a little bit. To each her own, though. Life begins at fertilization. Brother Deacon Asa says, those phony Mary worshipers, as a devout Brother Deacon, I can inform you that life begins at erection. Okay, we're going to give you that one. Yeah. As to natural death, Lee in New York says, death by execution is just like death in war. You believe that Amy Coney Barrett is opposed to war? No, when you put it like that, Lee, I can't, no. Randy points out, if life begins at fertilization, you turn every pregnant woman into a murderer. I pointed this out to a religious friend of mine, and he wigged out. Oh, they don't like being confronted with the facts. Those religious friends. All of our language that attends pregnancy, birth, reproduction has a certain amount of bigotry to it. I hate the word because, you see, if life begins at fertilization, according to these radical anti-woman freaks, then a woman whose pregnancy ends in spontaneous abortion, that's the medical term, becomes criminally liable. And it, well, they're not into prosecuting the women yet. Emphasis on the word yet. But see, the medical term is spontaneous abortion, but out in the world today, your Amy Coney Barretts will refer to it still as miscarriage. With the prefix miss implying some sort of failure in morals or performance or ethics, or that, you know, that mommy did something to keep baby from making it all the way to term. And this is the same kind of, and it's no surprise it starts out in Talibandiana, because this is the same crazy ass, disgusting, bigoted right wing state that gave us Mike Pencil Neck Geek. And of course, it was Mike Pencil Neck Geek whose obsession with women's reproductive cycles led God knows how many women in this country to send them the evidence of their having gotten their period that month and therefore not being pregnant and subject to his control. God almighty. Ain't no let up. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Thursday to you too, Bob. It's a beautiful sunny day out here in Decatur, Georgia. How about you?
It's been kind of cloudy today, Reggie, but overall I'm not complaining because all too soon we're going to be freezing our tuchuses off up here.
Right. Well, did you get hammered Tuesday night watching that, as I would like to call it, that 90-minute political horse race or that dog and pony show?
You mean the 90 minute WWE extravaganza?
Yes. Did you get hammered while you were watching it?
No, I've given all that up. I am living the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed life, Reggie. I was BT through the whole thing, bushy-tailed.
Well, it should have been one of those nights where you could have made an extreme exception just for that night. And one down, two more left to go. And speaking of which, Bob, do you think that the moderators, and speaking of moderators, do you think that Chris Waller's moderation skills were subpar?
He was not at his best. He was going to have an agenda one way or the other, but he was not at his best.
No, he's not like his old man at all.
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know he hates hearing. He hates hearing that, Reggie.
Why do you say that, Bob?
Well, he hates being reminded that his father was a far better journalist than he, Chris Wallace, will ever be, because Chris Wallace has spent the great majority of his career on his knees, servicing right-wing politicians for the benefit of, the Republicans who are in favor with the management of Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda.
Right. His father would have told Donald Trump to shut the fuck up and let candidate Joseph Biden speak and stop interrupting other people. You're not in the White House. On his show, his terms, his turf, if you know what I mean. And you would obey the rules just like everybody else, or else. And speaking of which, do you think they should have the ability to either mute and switch off their mics if they ever get that heated again? You know, if it gets out of control, far away out of control like it was Tuesday night?
It's hard for the moderator to do it, but it can certainly be done by the person running the board. For instance, if I wanted to talk over top of you right now, all I'd have to do would be to punch the button there, and you'd never know that I just muted you, and you might be talking all the way through, but no one would ever hear you.
Right. I mean, can we go back to the old school days where moderators actually controlled the debate and conventions and didn't give a ticket demo or rant at what people thought about their moderating styles? You know what I mean? What happened?
Well, there's only three presidential debates, and it was no accident that Chris Wallace was the first one, because there was no guarantee there'd be a second or a third. So they wanted a right-wing tool in there just in case there wasn't a second or third. On the other hand, Nitwit Nero is now resisting the idea, and he says,
"Why would I agree to a change in the rules when I won so convincingly the other night?"
You got two more left to go, you moron.
Well, he doesn't have to agree to a change in the rules. They'll just mute his ass, and then if he wants to walk off the stage and pout, that's up to him.
Wouldn't that be excellent? I mean, wouldn't that be great? If people saw him do that, and him turn red and say,
"Well,
and
it wouldn't." Hold on.
Go ahead, Bob.
It wouldn't. You always have to remember, Reggie. It won't matter to the maggots.
All right. Yeah, whether he wins or loses,
it won't. Whatever Donald Trump does in any situation is always the best, most awesomest thing that anybody could do, and only Donald Trump could do that. That's where the maggots are.
Right. Did you like any of Joe Biden's responses, or did he just let himself get?
I was reasonably pleased with what Joe Biden did, because Joe Biden had to show that he was the sane person in the room.
Right.
And that's what he did.
But, you know, even a guy like him, when you bring up somebody's family, the kid's gloves are off, churches are, you're going to have a come Jesus moment, right?
Well, you have to remember that what Donald Trump did, Reggie, was not just a case of Donald Trump being the dick that Donald Trump is. It was really and for true, no kidding, a strategy. I know that sounds nuts,
right?
But it was a real strategy. and what the strategy was, and, right. and this is what makes it so damn dirty.
Right.
Picking on someone's disability is filthy. It's filthy. That's like, you know, sticking a broom handle in the spokes of somebody who uses a wheelchair. It's it's vicious. So what the purpose was,
right,
was to interrupt, overtalk, shift subjects. All of those things were an attempt to make Joe Biden stutter. Because if Joe Biden stuttered, Reggie, the headlines of the next morning would be Joe Biden proves himself senile.
Right. And Donald Trump got
But here's the thing. You know what I mean? But here's the thing. Joe Biden, as a lifelong stutterer, understands damned well all the strategies and tactics and techniques used to avoid stuttering.
Right.
And so his team knew what was coming.
Right. Right.
And so he did not allow himself
that to happen,
to be affected by that tired, sorry, hateful, vicious strategy.
Right. Yeah. But don't forget, Nitwit Nira, as you call him, the orangutan, as Bill Maher calls him.
The orangutan.
Brought up his son, one dead, and the other one, you know, and Hunter Biden. That would piss them off. Joe Biden, that is. And did you like it when he told him to shut up, man? Would you please shut up, man? Did you like that part?
It was refreshing.
Joe Biden told Donald
it was. It was refreshing.
Now, why couldn't anybody else do that to him? Why couldn't anybody else do that to him? I guess he was fed up. Wouldn't you say, Bob?
Well, any human being would be, wouldn't they, Reggie?
Yes, they would, especially when you bring up this family. Had Joe Biden brought up Nitwit Nero's family, his head would have exploded, wouldn't it, Bob?
Well, he alluded to it. Did you not catch that? He alluded to it, and immediately Trump started shouting because he didn't want anybody talking about precious Princess Ivanka, my daddy Trump Kushner's contracts in China,
right?
And they didn't want anybody bringing up the skeevy business deals of Trader Tot or Eric the Dumber.
Right. What about Dumbo Jr.?
That's the one I call Trader Tot.
All right, him. So he got pissed off and started shouting him down, right?
Yeah.
And Joe was about to go there, but...
No, Joe said, I don't want to go there. I don't want to make this about family.
But, so if you want to go there, we can go there, right? You know. And like I said, man, Chris Wallace just lost control of that whole entire 90-minute debate. You know, by letting Donald Trump steamroll all over him and candidate in the future.
Reggie, Joe didn't get steamrolled. Joe got his points out. Joe won. Because Donald, let me put it this way, way back when I started back in radio, over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, there was a guy who did right wing talk for 2 hours in the morning. Mostly, it consisted of him reading the morning newspaper and sending his listeners falling asleep and driving into telephone poles. But I worked the evenings. Okay.
Right.
And they would spend an hour or more talking about what I talked about the night before. You believe that liberal?
Right.
God damn that Kincaid. He's a real commie. So that made more people want to tune into me later that night. And I never talked about him or what he talked about.
No, you wouldn't.
I didn't care.
No. You did. No, so, you ignored him, right?
So, you know, he was boosting me at the same time I was ignoring him. The same thing happened Tuesday. Right. The same thing happened Tuesday, Reggie.
Right. Right.
Donald Trump spent his entire time looking, staring daggers at Joe Biden. He spent very little time looking at the audience and no time directly addressing Americans at home. Joe Biden, on the other hand, broke the fourth wall and said, this isn't about me, this isn't about him, it's not about Chris, it's about you. Right. And I know he had to have touched people when he looked at them and said, how many of you sat down to dinner earlier this evening with an empty chair at your table?
Right.
Because someone that you love has died from the coronavirus at this man's hands.
Right.
That was powerful.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure that pissed them off, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Indeed.
It pissed them off. And well, I hope that Joe Biden keeps it up, man, for the next two debates.
I still think there's a 50-50 chance that Trump chickens out, because, after all, he is a lifelong coward.
Yeah. I wonder who's going to moderate the next two debates.
I haven't read that yet. I'm sure it's established, but I haven't found it anywhere. That's too far out.
Well, and there's another one coming up with Kamala Harris and Vice President Mike Pence.
Right. I talked about that last night. That's the brouhaha in Utah, Mike Pence is preparing by having former Wisconsin Governor Snot Walker stand in for Kamala Harris.
Right. Why would he want to do that?
That's all he's got.
Standing in for her?
Yeah, he's Snot Walker is the debate surrogate for Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, man. I don't think he needs his help, but okay.
Well, if nothing else, it should make for great comedy, but you know, whatever. Hey, Reggie, I got other folks on the line, so I got to roll, but good to talk to you, my friend.
Yeah, you have a very happy Thursday, Bob.
I'm going to try to have a happy remainder of one, and with any luck, I don't have to go anywhere tomorrow or Saturday, so that's just fine by me. Reggie, you take care of yourself.
Good. You too, Bob.
Later.
You too.
Bye now.
Later.
Reggie calling from Decatur, and from there, well, before I go to the next call, the white supremacy thing just won't go away. Kali Maganini had a little press conference thingy today, and it didn't go particularly well, because Kali Maganini was asked to denounce white supremacy. And she refused. And she also refused to explain why Kleagle Trump, Exalted Cyclops Trump, Grand Dragon Trump, won't do it either. And it actually managed to piss off, of all people, John Roberts from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And he had a little fit on air after that press briefing.
For all of you on Twitter who were hammering me for answering that for asking that question, I don't care, because it's a question that needs to be asked. And clearly, the president's Republican colleagues a mile away from here are looking for an answer for it, too. So stop deflecting. Stop blaming the media. I'm tired of it.
All right. John Roberts is tired of it, so we're going to let.
Yeah. Meanwhile, upstairs at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, But the answer, and the fact that John Roberts doesn't have the nerve to come right out and say it, tells you a lot about John Roberts. The reason Kayleigh McEnany couldn't denounce white supremacy is it would have gotten her fired. Because hashtag Trump is a white supremacist. I've hammered on this and hammered on this and hammered on this, and I'm not going to quit. When you are raised by a racist, when you are raised by a Klansman, it's going to be real hard for some of the racism not to leak through. And he wasn't just raised by a Klansman. His daddy brought him into the business, and they together got busted. Fred and Donnie got busted for being racist landlords in their scummy little apartment buildings. They wound up entering a consent decree. They promised they wouldn't be racists anymore. It was a lie, but they promised. In a court document. And so if Donald Trump walks out and says, I fucking hate white supremacy, I despise it, I don't even want white supremacist votes. Because that's one thing Joe Biden's not been afraid to do. He did say, you know, if you want A, B, C, D, then I'm not your guy. During the primary campaign. And it pissed a lot of people off. But none of those people that were white supremacists. Donald Trump cannot afford to lose any of his base because that's all he has. That's it. And that's why he can't denounce white supremacy. And that's why Kayleigh McEnany can't denounce white supremacy. It's plain and simple. This is how dictators behave. Especially the racist variety. Now, let's run over to the phones and check in with Scott. We haven't heard from Scott in a while. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Now, I'm doing all right, but you've confused me. I had to pick myself up off the floor when you were talking about Scott Walker in the debate practice. Now, let me get this straight, or as I would normally say, now hold on a goddamn, I saw Jamie Gumm do it in Silence of the Lambs minute, Bob. You mean to tell me that Scott Walker stuff his tiny junk between his legs when he was playing the part of Senator Harris?
Ah, come on. Did you really have to take that untoward shot at dinner in the Central and Mountain time zone? Did you have to do that? Did you have to go after Billable Rick's brunch, late lunch, by mentioning Snot Walker's tiny junk? Did you have to do that, Scott?
Well, I'm sorry. I
need you to be a little bit more thoughtful for the needs of the rest of the community, please.
People are eating. All right. I won't do that no more.
Hell, you may have ruined Cynthia's tri-tip in advance.
Did it utter a small scream from the kitchen?
No,
there?
but now you've done it, and Cynthia's going to be putting that thing in the oven and going, Scott Walker's tiny junk.
I've been, after Tuesday night, nothing has been quite the same for me, Bob. I've sat for the last 48 hours, thereabouts, feeling as if I've got a head full of angry bees going full tilt boogie inside of my head. Not even the powerful hallucinogenics I took as a wayward youth prepared me adequately for what I witnessed on Tuesday night. I knew it was going to be batshit crazy, but I hadn't. I mean, I couldn't normally. See, up until Tuesday night, I actually like political debates on television. I like watching them, especially during the primary season, because they can be very entertaining. But there was no entertainment value whatsoever in Tuesday night's episode. I expected it, but I never imagined it was going to be quite as just completely unhinged as it was. And I'm talking, of course, about Trump. Biden did fine when he could get a word in. But Jesus.
I know.
Are we on the same page? I kind of think
sort of.
We are.
I mean, it was maddening. Agnes had a rotten day all day yesterday because she was here at home watching it while I was on the road listening via the radio. And she wasn't okay when I got home. Not anything dramatic, but and the next day she was like, I can't get over it. It was too fucking much.
Well, according to historians, political historians, back in 1960, when the first televised debate of the modern era took place between John F. Kennedy and Richard Milhouse Nixon, it was heard on radio and television.
And people on radio thought Nixon won. People on TV thought Kennedy won.
Have you and Agnes compared notes?
Yes.
As to
no, we both we both agree. We both agree that he's batshit crazy. It's just that it had a more visceral impact on Agnes because of the visual component. She got to see him be batshit crazy and hear him be batshit crazy, while I was only able to hear him being batshit crazy.
You seen the video?
Yes.
He was standing, they said, the term that they're using in the polite media is that at various times Trump would send eye daggers, you know, in Biden's direction. That's not what he was doing. He was giving him fuck eye, is what he was doing, and that's not the same. Giving him eye fucks. No, one of them is good, the other's bad. Whichever the bad one was, that's what Trump was trying to give old Joe. But he stood his ground and did remarkably well under the circumstances.
Well, and in point of fact, Megan has a note for you.
Oh, good.
Megan said, please tell Scott, that wasn't a debate. It was two adults trying to wrangle an overgrown toddler who suddenly crapped his diaper and he couldn't be changed for an hour and a half.
No, Megan, you're right. That's exactly what it was. And thank God we don't have smell-o-vision. Jesus.
And, oh, you want to know the damage you did?
Oh, no.
I take personally affronts to the Horns LGBTQ community den mother Matt in San Francisco.
Oh dear.
Matt says thanks, Scott. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't.
Matt
have gone
says,
there.
Normally I am susceptible to thinking of men's junk. However, I must admit Scott Walker's has never crossed my mind until today. Now I need brain bleach.
Oh, dear.
And see, adding to this, Matt has been sober for 35 years.
Oh, dear. What have I done?
And so he can't avail himself of the brain bleach that some members of this community avail themselves. And that's just a low down and dirty thing to do, Scott.
Dare I tell Matt what Scott Walker's drag name
is? No. Because, again, it was Matt last night who explained to us the meaning of go brush your hair, bitch. And that would have to then be applied. So, no, we do not want Snot Walker's drag name. Because, again, falling back on the advice of and teaching of Matt, Snot Walker could never do drag. Snot Walker, like Rudy Giuliani before him, would only be a man in a dress. Okay.
Well, yeah. That's
so, I learn and I remember and I try to carry it all forward. I try to when people go to the trouble of teaching me things, I try to take that teaching to heart. Thank you, Matt. Meanwhile, James in Illinois says, for Scott, you can bring up all of the disgusting blood, gore, guts, or toilet humor you want around me. I'll just keep chewing. But James is tougher than most of us.
Well, Let me shift gears then, because I don't want to rile up the Horn family or upset them in any measurable way. Earlier, you wondered aloud whether John Oliver will be live this Sunday. He will, in fact, have a live broadcast.
Then I don't see how the Bob Murray story doesn't make it into the list.
Oh, they'll probably go into overtime. Because, I mean, he and that squirrel or chipmunk, whatever it was, he would not, you know, that's one of the reasons, no matter how bad things get for me financially, I will never cancel HBO. Because I get my Bill Maher on Friday, and I get my John Oliver on Sunday, and plus lots of good documentaries and other
Bill, stuff. Now, we've kind of got a parting of the ways there. Bill Maher lost most of his relevance for me a while back. But okay. John Oliver, yeah, can't touch him. He's better than 90% on 90% of what's on all the other channels.
You mentioned the film The Fountainhead and the book that it was based on. For you TCM subscribers, it was on the other day, but I didn't record it. But it's on the TCM app through April 28th, and I've seen it. It's one of my favorite movies, only because Patricia Neal and Gary Cooper are pleasant to look at. And they do an admirable job given the material that they had to work with. And I like old.
Well, if you read the backstory on the production of it, you know, Gary Cooper always came across as this stolid, unflappable kind of guy.
Yep.
I mean, Gary Cooper just played Gary Cooper. The golden age of the Hollywood leading man. But I have read that things got really, really ugly on the set of The Fountainhead because Ayn Rand insisted on being present. And in fact, insisted on trying to tell Gary Cooper how to deliver his lines.
Oh dear.
in one of those interminable monologues for which Ayn Rand is infamous. I mean, have you read The Fountainhead? Or not The Fountainhead. Have you read Atlas Shrugged?
I've never read either of them because I'm sure her estate gets money when people buy that book, and I'm just not going to buy it.
Agnes found a copy for me for free years and years ago. And there's actually a, for lack of a better term, a historical record of my reading of it way back in the early days of this program. I seem to remember
hearing about that.
It was awful. And toward the end, there's a monologue that probably goes on for at least 30 and maybe 50 or more pages.
50 pages of turgid prose, I'll bet.
Well, it's dialogue. It's John Galt talking about the things that he believes. And she's got another one of those 50-page turds in The Fountainhead, which is what she was trying to get Gary Cooper to properly declaim.
I'll bet you that was...
I don't know if she wanted him to do all the great hand gestures, the big stentorian 19th century oratory. And now, he said, swinging his arms wide. Gary Cooper was not okay.
How did the director, King Vidor, take it?
Not well. Probably less well than Gary Cooper did.
Plus, I believe, weren't...
Because his name was going to be on there as director.
Yeah.
And he had a union. But he was contractually obligated to allow that horrible woman to be on set.
And during that time frame, weren't Gary and Patricia Neal a number... Weren't they involved at that point, or was it before or later? I can't remember.
That evades and escapes me. I can't speak to that.
Because I know at one time, because I believe they had done more than one film together. Somebody can look that up. But if memory, as hot as it is, it's a wonder I remember my name or yours, Fred. Jesus. And it's not that hot, Bob. Well, I mean, it's 93 degrees, but for this time of year, that's just a wee bit warm, toasty. God damn. But I'm going to watch The Fountainhead maybe over the weekend. Because I like Gary Cooper and Patricia Neal. I mean, oh, I know the other film that they did together was Bright Leaves. It's about a tobacco magnate in the 1800s who it's kind of loosely framed after George Washington Hill, the man who was the head of American Tobacco in the early part of the 20th century. And there's even a documentary done by a documentarian whose name escapes me, who is like the great-grandson or great-great-grandson of the guy that was portrayed in the movie Bright Leaves. I forget whichever it is. But yeah, they worked well together, I thought. Oh, by the way, how's the non-smoking going? Day 17, is it?
Day 17.
Good for you. Good for you.
In fact, I just messaged Agnes and I said, I think I did a little too much nicotine. I feel kind of crappy. You know how you feel when you chew the nicotine gum too hard?
Yeah.
That. Only with the pouches.
Yeah, I've got to find out about those pouches because I've seen the lozenges. And I've seen the patch, and I still use the gum.
Oh, gosh, there's several different brands out. There's Velo and Zen and On and Drift and Rogue. And there's even more flavors out there if you go overseas, like the Swedes who pioneered all this stuff.
Yeah.
They've got apple flavor, and they've got one that's like... tart licorice. Never going to be trying that one. Coffee, wintergreen, spearmint, cool mint, cinnamon, mango, honey lemon.
Is there a bubblegum flavored? I might go for that.
The Velo citrus is kind of bubblegummy. And it comes in like 2 and 4 milligram pouches. The thing is, the clerk handed me the wrong strength today, and I got 8 milligrams instead of 2, and I just took one of the 8s. Now
and you can overdose on nicotine.
You can.
The side effects of it. It may not kill you necessarily, but there are definite unpleasant side effects. Like when you chew the gum too fast, you get gastric issues and lightheadedness and all kinds of stuff.
Now, I think what made it worse was the fact that I'm far enough along now, because like almost all cigarettes have at least 10 milligrams of nicotine per.
Yeah.
I'm far enough removed from them now that I probably shouldn't be doing anything more than 2 or maybe 4.
Yeah.
And so that may have been what happened.
Well, the first version was gum that came out, I think, in the 80s. And the principle behind it is, and the best way
And you
way
had to
I
have
ever,
a prescription for it.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I remember that. The principle behind it, as I recall, was they compared the difference between the buzz and satisfaction that you get from a cigarette versus the buzz and satisfaction you get from a piece of Nicorette gum, the difference between mainlining heroin and having a bottle of beer. And that's still a pretty good, in other words, it's enough to take the edge off, to trick your body to hit those receptors but not enough to where you could get addicted to it. Like,
well, now in my case, the pouches from Jump, it didn't take the edge off. It made it go away. It satisfied it. It was over. And so really? The biggest part of my struggle was beating the associational aspects of the addiction.
Yeah,
I went five days before I had a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's probably
smart. Or decaf, as it is.
Now, are you finding yourself acclimating to being a non-smoker? Because it really does take a little while to get into it.
Yeah, I am, and I think that's why I think I can go down to the twos and fours now. Because the there's greater time in between the sensation of need, and now that we're almost, you know, Monday will be 3 weeks, almost into that magic 21-day mark where you reestablished a new habit.
Yeah.
A lot of the associational stuff. I'm doing the program, and I don't even think twice about smoking.
Good for you.
And when you consider that there's 17 plus years of me lighting one cigarette off another.
Yeah, been there, done that.
And you know, not necessarily to smoke them.
Yeah,
I smoked a bunch of them, but you know, to wave around Tom Snyder like.
Yeah. Well, he quit, and Mike Wallace quit. He was a heavy smoker for years. Hell, he used to do commercials, first for Philip Morris, the brand Philip Morris, and Parliament. I believe later on.
I saw an old photo old video the other day, and it was perfectly timed. In you know, for purposes of my life.
Yeah.
It was an old black and white piece of video of Albert Camus.
Oh wow.
Dancing. You know, the father of absurdism. Albert Camus, wow. Dancing, and of course, in his fingers, between his first two fingers, was one of those god-awful French, I presume, gitans.
Those in the blue pack?
It was a black and white photo, and they didn't show his package.
Yeah,
oh, Jesus, wait a minute.
Are we back to
they
that?
Didn't show his cigarette pack. God damn, do you see what you started?
Well, they are in a blue pack, as I recall. I've seen colored photos.
You sure that wasn't the Galois?
Well, wait a minute. Yes, now that you mention it, I believe you're right. Oh, and the actor in one of my favorite, all-time favorite films, the original The Day of the Jackal, the guy who played the policeman who was after the potential assassin. Can't think of his name. Jesus, he passed away the other day, which made me sad. He was in he was in a lot of stuff. His obituary's in the New York Times. Speaking of things French, but I've got a question.
Okay.
I've tried not to follow anything having to do with this rapidly approaching Supreme Court fight. So-called, you know, with the Senate Judiciary Committee run by Lindsey. But it's going to be upon us in 2 weeks or less.
11 days.
Huh?
11 days, a week from Monday.
Okay. Ms. Barrett, is she a native of Indiana?
No, she was born to a homemaker mother and a Shell Oil corporate lawyer father New Orleans.
Well, you mentioned South Bend. That's why I was wondering.
And I think that she was born in 1972, so she's 9 years younger than me.
God. Well, I believe you mentioned South Bend, and I don't understand the connection.
She's a law professor at Notre Dame.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I was from 1960 until 1968, during my elementary school days, I was taught, kind of, sort of, well, actually I was taught rather well, by the Sisters of the Holy Cross. And their order is based, I don't even know if there's still a thing, but at the time I was coming up, they're based in South Bend, Indiana. They had the kind of big paper plate gizmo over their heads, like a halo or whatever.
Yeah, all those different nuns unions have the distinctive headgear.
I've never heard of called nuns unions, Bob. But some of the old ones were really strict, and they had these. You could probably kill a man, or at least a child, with these fucking rosary beads that were hung on their... They had a rope belt. Well, let me do the entire ensemble, since we're talking about ecclesiastical drag. The top of the thing, all of their hair was covered. You could not see hair. We used to speculate that they were bald. So you had this...
Well, hair shaving was part of the... It is part of some of the nun rackets.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the Audrey Hepburn movie.
Well, yeah.
The first thing they do is shave poor Audrey Hepburn's head.
The Magdalene Sisters is another chilling look at being a nun, at least in Ireland in the 60s or 70s, whenever it was set. But, oh, God, that's... But, yeah, they would have this the white paper plate thing over the top of their head covering and a big thing going down the back, you know, like a bride's train, okay? And then a white, big old fucking white bib in the front because you don't want to see their boobs.
Bob. Well, that was to catch the gruel dribbles.
And then a little heart-shaped ornament at the bottom of the bib, and then a rope-looking thing around their waist, and a big-ass rosary with beads about the size of a medium to small-sized jawbreaker. And I don't know how many fucking beads are on a rosary, because I haven't seen one.
Yeah, what's that giant marble that's up from the regular regulation size marbles?
Somebody knows. I'm thinking cat's eye, but that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about an ingot or a nugget or a goober or.
All right, I got. You know, why do I ask these questions when we've got the fucking internet right in front of me? This will, of course, lead me to a geology page, but no. No, I don't want types of marble by composition.
Pluralize it. Marbles. Marbles game, and that ought to bring you the right link. If we had had the internet and laptops when I was a student, I'd probably be the head of a university somewhere. So I'm glad I spared the world that ordeal. God, let me take a sip.
Ah, okay, now we've got it. Now we've got it.
That's great coffee.
Glossary of marble terms. Why is it blank? Damn it.
Maybe those are invisible marbles. That's what's in Trump's head. I mean, he doesn't have all of them, but the ones that are still rattling around.
And he's lost a few, yeah.
Are quite invisible. God, I know the word. I just cannot bring it to mind. It's not gimlet. It's, oh, God, it's a... I don't know, it's been so many years. You know, I've had marbles, but I don't believe I've ever played a game of marbles, because there are established rules and techniques. And I like playing in the dirt like any other person, Bob, but I just never got into marbles.
My dad said he was a real pro, but I never got into it. It just...
You must have blanked out there because I don't know who the he is.
Oh, my dad.
Okay. And young men, and maybe even girls, if they played marbles, they were very, very protective, and they would trade.
Aggie,
there you go. God, like, the worst nun I ever had was Sister Agnes Olma. Oh, man, in the eighth grade, trying to teach me math. Are you kidding? And she looked like, and you can Google this and see the guy's face. In the late 60s, there was a syndicated right-wing talk guy on television called Alan Burke, A-L-A-N-B-U-R-K-E, and he recorded up at WNEW-TV, Metromedia, in NYC. Alan Burke, you put a habit on his head and shave the beard off, and you've got Sister Agnes Olma. And she had the personality.
Jesus, you really are going overtime at people's dinner, aren't you?
Well... How so? I'm talking about Sister Agnes Olma, who's probably roasting in hell as we speak. So, but she was an unpleasant person.
Oh, well, you'll be pleased to know that Chris Wallace has decided to break his silence. He's blaming Trump for the shit show that Chris Wallace participated in. He bears the primary responsibility for what happened on Tuesday. At a certain point, 45 minutes in, I called a halt to the debate for a moment and said, "This really isn't serving America, and please stop the interruptions." I was really hoping for the debate that America wanted to see, which was a serious exchange of views. Oh, come on!
You're nicer than I am. I call bullshit on Chris Wallace and his phony excuses.
I felt like I had gotten together all of the ingredients. I had baked this beautiful, delicious cake, and then, frankly, the president put his foot in it.
Bullshit again.
Yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. In his prime, did not Mike Wallace in the 60s interview Malcolm X? Did not Mike Wallace interview, some years later, Louis Farrakhan? Did not Mike Wallace interview either Yasser Arafat and or the Ayatollah? Now, when you're going up against that type of interview subject, you've not only got to have your wits about you, but you've got to bring something to the enterprise. Chris Wallace didn't bring shit to the debate, or maybe he did bring shit, and that's why it was such a lousy performance.
Yeah, that's the problem. He did. He brought a wheelbarrow full.
If you go up to Massachusetts, Tinsbury, I think is the name of the town that Mike Wallace is buried in, the cemetery up there, the Chop Road Cemetery, I believe is the name of it, because I looked this up last night. If you go up there and stand by his final resting place, that odd whirring noise that you hear will be the sound of Mike Wallace spinning. At 8,000 RPM in his grave. There's not a more ineffectual twit on the planet than Chris Wallace. So, God damn. I always, when I call this show, I'm just as even-keeled and pleasant as you could possibly be inside of a human skin. But by the time we get to the 4:23 mark, West Coast time, I'm just frothing at the mouth. I'm sorry. I don't mean to agate. Thank you for telling me that word.
Yeah, Dave number 11, by the way, tells us, Aggies, cat's eyes, steelies, and puries are all prized possessions.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the things I haven't touched on this evening but deserves it, reminds us, the Napa fire in California is now headed towards the Lake County vineyards.
Oh, dear.
And a lot of the top shelf vines are gone.
Jesus.
Apparently, things are not going well. 100 degree Fahrenheit's on the temperature maps. Some tailwind from the southwest, Dave tells us.
And it's going to gust to 20 miles an hour tomorrow. Jesus Christ.
As somebody who loves
to smoke meats, I can tell you that grapevines burn really well. That's going to be a hellacious blow to the California economy.
Oh yeah, that wine is one of our biggest industries, and we've already been hit in the TV production and the motion picture production and tourism. Jesus, is Disneyland open yet?
Disneyland just laid off a shit ton of people. Well, Disney World did. I'm sorry, don't know about Disneyland. Now, meanwhile, America will be able to get by because, of course, there's still the Trump Vineyard in Virginia.
I wouldn't say.
And now I have just shit all over the enophiles in the audience who love their high-quality wine.
I wouldn't soak my...
Oh, no, there's a review out there. That stuff is cough syrup.
I wouldn't soak the needles that I use to inject heroin in the Donald Trump Vineyard's product.
You know, there's a basic rule. Never buy wine or liquor from a guy who doesn't drink wine or liquor.
Well, there, you got that. I wouldn't buy anything from that fool. And I'm ashamed that I ever watched The Apprentice. I mean, I used to watch that the first couple of seasons. And because all I knew him to be was a loudmouth who supposedly had something to do with buildings and real estate. Little did I know what a horse's ass the man truly is. Even worse than a horse's ass.
You damn sure learned the hard way.
I'm sorry, say it again?
You damn sure learned the hard way.
Well, I think we've all learned. And 32 days from now, America will have an election day unlike any other, okay? And I sincerely hope that the Democratic Party, up and down the slate, up and down the ballot, wins in unprecedented, irrefutable numbers, everything from dog catcher to the U.S. president, and God knows the Senate. We have got to send these fuckers a message. We've had our folly. Okay? Now, I'm sure everybody, even the most liberal person on earth, for a time in the 2016 run-up during the Republican primary season, kind of saw that it was entertaining and fun and whimsical, never thinking that the Republican Party would nominate this horse's ass. Well, we've had our fun, boys and girls. We have had our fun. Our folly has been fully achieved. Now we've got to get down to serious shit. And it doesn't get any more serious than... And the question you've got to ask yourself, remember Reagan asked in 80, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The operating question in 2020 is, America, do you want to wake up for the next 4 years with the political, social, even spiritual equivalent of a flaming paper sack full of dog shit on your doorstep every morning? Do you really want that, America?
You know, you remind me of something, Scott.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to serve.
And this, I think this is a legitimate question. If Trump loses, please.
Amen.
On January 21st, 2021, will Jack Dorsey over at Twitter finally, because he's just another private citizen, shut his fucking account down?
Jack Dorsey runs Twitter, I take it.
Yeah, at Jack.
Well, it depends. What do we
because,
know about
you
Jack
know, he's
Dorsey?
Because he's violated every term of service that Twitter has, that everybody who participates on Twitter has to sign off on and live with, and Twitter will not shut down his account
because he's president of the new 90 states of America.
Well, when is he's not a Trump supporter?
Well, What he is a supporter of the single biggest driver of traffic on his site. I'm not talking about Trump has the biggest account, but Twitter can't make money and hasn't made money. And Trump, you know, Trump's daily vomitings on Twitter, you keep it, you know, keep eyeballs on it. So, you know, an interesting question. Maybe somebody, maybe a movement should be started. If Trump loses, no more Trump on Twitter, January 21st, 2021. 1-21-21.
Let me take a stab at answering that.
Well, hold on a second, because you got a couple of notes.
Okay.
Among other things, our buddy Jeremy in Vermont said, I sympathize with Scott. I went to a Catholic kindergarten, and that was enough. And Disney's blamed the government of California for a bunch of the laws for not letting them go fucking balls out in full open. But they're not about all the dollars, right? Yeah, exactly. And thanks going out to Jeremy, not in Vermont, for jumping in on the evening's fundraising. Thank you so very much. Thank you so kindly indeed. Much appreciated. Steve in New York notes, Trump wine is great as a floor wax or rust remover for your car. It's certainly not worth it. It's certainly not worth a shit as a dessert topping. Dan says, yesterday I looked up Mad Dog 2020, this year's vintage. The first Google ad was for Trump Cabernet. Oh!
Oh, bell, ring that bell.
Yeah, most definitely. And Randy in PA reminds us of the great, the late, great Chai Chai Rodriguez's quote. You know, Les Nessman reference there. Big boots, no hat, no fucking cattle. That's what he'd say to himself when he missed a short putt. Big boots, big hat, no fucking cattle. That's Trump in a nutshell. And wouldn't it be nice if we could keep Trump in a nutshell? Then again, if you gave him an enema, you could bury him in a matchbox.
You have to ask the nut, don't you know? But you raised a good question. What is the guy's name? Jack Dorsey?
Yeah.
On January 21st, will he escort Trump off of Twitter? He may not need to. Now, provided Trump can manage to stay out of jail, he's going to have his own channel, either streaming or on cable, I'm sure. He's going to probably have his own social media app. It may not matter what Jack Dorsey does, because you know that I've heard, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's urban legend, but I've heard that Trump didn't even want to be president. He wanted to use it as a springboard, running for president.
To found a new TV network. Yeah, that's made the rounds. I don't know if it ever has been, and I don't know if it is actually susceptible to being proven factual or not.
Would Snopes know? They know pretty much everything.
No, because it means it somehow or another you've got to know the inner workings of his mind.
Well, wasn't there an article or something at some point of web names that he, domain names that he reserved?
Maybe. I mean, there, but even that's not much in the way of help.
Well, he was kind of running out of options even before he started running for president, coming down the golden escalator and shit. God. Man, I laughed with everybody else. And I remember seeing it. It was on, I believe it was on my birthday.
I don't recall laughing, because I'm never going to lose a bet overestimating the intelligence. I don't know, how do you put that? I'm never going to lose a bet either over or underestimating the intelligence of a significant portion of the American electorate.
Yeah, but did you ever watch The Apprentice in the early
seasons? No, never.
Well, see, that was part of his shtick. All of it was filmed or videotaped. They haven't filmed anything since the 60s on television or 70s anyway.
At Trump Tower.
It was all done at Trump Tower. And that wasn't there a piece the other day about the money he got from The Apprentice basically kept him afloat? $400 and some million, if I'm remembering the number. If The Apprentice hadn't come along, who knows where he would be? He certainly wouldn't have had because there was no way he was going to run on his reputation in New York. He had to have a gimmick. He had to have a TV show, you know?
A dodge, a hustle.
Well, yeah, it's like all of them. It's like Jim Baker, not the former presidential or secretary of state.
No,
or presidential
the PTO
advisor.
Club guy.
The PTO, Jim and Tammy Faye, God bless them, wherever they are, Pat, the liquor, what do you call it, liquor officer?
Oh, former liquor supply officer, Marion Pat Robertson, yes.
Yeah, all of these fucking shysters and scam artists, all of them, without question, have done it. Look, going back to Oral Roberts, I remember as a kid, like a 6 or 7 year old kid, on Sunday morning or Saturday morning, sitting in front of the TV, you know, and put your hand up on the TV screen. And I know you love my Aunt Emma stories. She had a parakeet named Pete, and old Pete the parakeet fell off his perch and died. Or he died and then fell off his perch. And I wanted to hold old Pete the parakeet next to the TV screen when Oral Roberts was doing his, you know, put your bird up to the to the television.
Aunt Emma wouldn't let you?
No, she said no. Because she was smart enough to know that it was a scam, you know? Jesus. So
I gotta tell you, I just got a photograph just now from Matt in San Francisco.
Okay.
And it is absolutely heartrending, breathtaking. I mean, smoke, bad air. It's a photo of the San Francisco area. Matt says, normally, subject line, not normal. Normally, you can see the skyline and the Golden Gate Bridge from here. You can't. And the sun looks like a weak and distant disk on you know, it looks like you're looking at the sun from fucking Mars.
Yeah.
Matt adds, people have lost their homes, some for a second time. The air in the Bay Area is unhealthy to breathe. Global warming is real.
Bet your ass.
And, you know, the one time I've been to San Francisco, I immediately fell in love with the city. And everything that's happening to California just breaks my heart. Because I have for so long looked to California as a place, as a haven of sanity and a haven of intelligence and dare I say it, even decency, as compared to the mouth-walking knuckle breathers, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, libertardians, Republicans, what, and it feels awfully damn deliberate that these things are, yes, climate change is real, but so too is deliberate indifference. And you can bet your ass that if these things were happening in a so-called battleground state, it would be all hands on fucking deck, Scott.
About that the other day, but something else about California, it is currently, and for the foreseeable future, an oasis of sanity, but it wasn't always that way. I mean, you remember old 666 was governor of the state for 2 or 3 terms once upon a time. That was his springboard, his scam. This state has come a long fucking way. I've only been here 20 years, but you go back better part of 50 years, 60 years even, it wasn't the same place. And to me, it's a object lesson in what happens when the populace, the majority populace population of a state, comes to their fucking senses. There's no reason we can't have more blue states in this country. I mean, there are some excuses, and maybe there are some reasons, but I think that in 2018, we began to see the stirrings of a shift politically in various surprising places in this country. And I think 2020, it's going to be unmistakable. Will the job be done? No, I don't think so. But we will have moved ahead a number of spaces on the game board of life, hopefully, if we can vote, if we can get out to vote. I heard, did you read that thing about the Texas governor?
Yeah, Lou shared that story with me. Goddamn.
Now, is that one drop-off box for the whole fucking state?
No, that's one per county, as I read it.
Well, even that, have you seen the sizes of counties in Texas?
You know, there would be various drop-off locations for ballots in Texas counties. And now Governor Greg Abbott has ordered that there be only one per county. And Jesus Christ, maybe I'm wrong, but I think there are some Texas counties that are bigger than Rhode Island.
Yeah. Yeah. We have big counties here in California, and I've lived, obviously, here, and also in Texas for a year and a half, down by Corpus Christi, down in John Brittabo's neck of the woods. And have you ever driven through Texas?
No, been there once, flew in.
You could not, and I know from experience, the drive, I mean, we got out of Oklahoma, and the object of the exercise was to get to Corpus Christi. We drove all fucking day and still had to stop to sleep somewhere before we could finish the excursion. It was incredible. It was a big, honking big state. So,
and obviously, you've only spent a year and a half there versus 20 in California, so that speaks for itself.
Well, and back then, but you know, in that was in the 93, 94 thereabouts. It was a whole different place back then. Now, they've been saying that it's going more and more purple, if not outright blue eventually. Hopefully it'll happen in time. But what, one fucking drop-off box per county? Are you shitting me? I don't mean to take John's tagline, but are you shitting me, Bob? God damn. Talk me down. I'm telling you,
it's just simple, Scott. This is the ultimate manifestation of something that we have known for a very long time in this country. Republicans know it. Democrats know it. Anybody paying attention knows it. In American electoral politics, low turnouts favor Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
High turnouts favor Democrats. It's just a fact. And so with that fact in hand, what we have now is the ultimate manifestation of that reality. This is a full court press to depress turnout. At some point in time, like I said, there was a blank at the bottom of the envelope that my ballot was in, and I hand carried Agnes and my ballot. Agnes is in my ballot. I hand carried it to the clerk's office a couple of weeks back. But there's a blank at the bottom that where the person challenging my vote, if something should happen, if that should be done, challenge it as a provisional ballot, has to sign off. And I remember looking at that and thinking, by God, somebody challenges my fucking ballot, I'm taking a baseball bat for the conversation. Because
the
game is on. And we were talking on the front porch last night about the fact that even if there is no case to be made, we can still expect him to try to throw it into the courts and to get a 6-3 right-wing majority or a 5-4 right-wing majority, assuming that maybe old Balls and Strikes sides with the normal people, to keep Donald Trump president and overturn the will of the people as manifested through mail-in and drop-off ballots. I mean, I don't know if you caught that part. He tried to draw some sort of a distinction. It was one of the moments when he was actually trying to make some sort of sense or some sort of point Tuesday night. He said, well, no, solicited ballots. I don't have a problem with solicited ballots.
And said that
in response to Chris Wallace saying, you know, you vote absentee, you put it and you mail it.
Solicited.
And then he repeated the lie that there are unsolicited ballots being mailed hither, thither, and yon across America, which it was one of those moments when I was kind of, even in the car, fit to scream. When I was, no, they're applications. God damn it. There are no unsolicited ballots. Okay. They're unsolicited to the extent that you don't have to write in for one every time in places like California and Oregon. But that's still a function of who's on the voter rolls. They're not just sending them out in conjunction with the latest, with the latest entry form from Publisher's fucking clearinghouse. There are no unsolicited ballots. They do not exist, and we're doing a terrible job of simply pushing back on that one goddamned idea.
Well, another place where Chris Wallace should have stood up and said something was when he was going on and on about ballots being dumped in rivers and creeks. What's the name of the river? What's the name of the creek?
Not just that, but the fact that the Pennsylvania case that got most of that bullshit started happened because the ballots were dumped because of a suit filed by the Trump campaign and the Republican Party of fucking Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there you go. And in the places, the states, where it will be most important that they go blue this year in 32 days, that's where the effort is. They're double teaming in an effort to rat fuck the vote in these most important places. Ohio is one of them. God, I'm glad I don't live in Ohio anymore. You know, I miss it. I miss the vibe of Ohio, but I would much rather be in California during an election year, or any other year, I guess, for that matter. They're hell bent for leather here, Bob. They know what the stakes are. Because see, after how long has it been since Reagan came into office as president? Was it 40 years ago? Can it be that long ago? Yeah.
January 20th, 1981.
So there you go. Almost 40 years ago, this country began a long slide into madness and evil.
Oh, I'll never forget getting through. See, I didn't get to vote in the 1980 election. I wasn't old enough. I turned 18 in 1981, and I was in government class, and I got thrown out of class. I was told to go to the office, but instead I just went out back behind the field house and smoked a joint and a cigarette.
There you go.
Because it was late in the day, class was almost over. And oh God, what time? Because I'm trying to remember the exact timing of it. You know, we were in Central Time, Eastern Time is where it happened. I'm trying to remember why it worked out the way it did. I'm looking here to see if I can. Yeah. So it's 2:27 p.m. on in March of 1981. March 30th, 1981. So that would have been 1:27 p.m. in government class, my senior year of high school. They announced the shooting of Ronald Reagan. And before anybody, before I could stop my mouth from saying what my brain was demanding, I said, yeah. Good! And, well, you can just leave class. What? There's no First Amendment in here?
Were you still in Alabama then?
Oh, hell yes!
Oh, God, God. You're lucky you didn't get beaten or strung up.
And it was a teacher that I got. It was a teacher I got along well with. I got an A in his class and everything, but he was not going to put up with that shit out of mouth. He asked me.
Yeah. It was on March 30th, 1981. I remember that day well.
You know, John Hinckley he was too fucking nuts to buy a decent pistol.
Now let's be careful, Bob. I mean. Officer General, Agent Fred.
Agent Fred can suck. Well,
stop it.
Because Reagan's dead. There's no harm. There's no illegality in talking about that.
That's true.
Yeah, and that greasy-headed old freak being wheeled into the OR and looking up at the surgeon who's going to try to save his miserable, rotten life and saying, "Well, I certainly hope you're a Republican." And that surgeon looking down at him and saying, "Well, Mr. President, today we're all Republicans."
Yeah, honey, I forgot to duck.
That putrid, partisan piece of shit, Ronald Reagan.
Well, and that was the start of where we are now.
Yeah, it was. I'm never going to stop despising that old fraud.
Yeah, I know. I. Me too, Bob. I mean, And granted, there were certain abuses in the Democratic Party in the 60s and 70s leading up to the, quote, era of Reagan. But that's what they used for the excuse. But what did we get out of it? We got two terms of Reagan. We got a term of H.W. And then we got a couple of terms of Bill Clinton. Okay. And then we got two terms of W, and then we got two terms of Obama, and we're pretty near toward the end of the first term, and hopefully the last fucking term of the tangerine-tinted tub of tow cheese. Okay, sorry, there goes dinner somewhere, but we have got to retake the reins of power in this land. Otherwise, it's an existential thing.
No, we don't.
Thing,
we don't. Four more years of him, and we're fucked. We're already pretty well fucked. Four more years of him, and we're so far past fucked, the light from fucked won't reach us for a million years.
Bingo.
But I wanted to. You'll find this, I think, gratifying to a certain extent. You, Scott, in San Diego.
Yes.
Old radio hand that you are. Perhaps even sometimes participating in real, actual, no kidding journalism. Are qualified based on your prior statement. Where's this fucking river? You remember when you said that a few minutes ago?
Yeah, the stream or creek or river.
You are qualified now to work for Fox News Radio. Just check the audio. Kaylee Maganini had a terrible day today.
Oh,
she's
good.
Probably still throwing things.
Nothing pleases me more than for her to have a terrible day.
And so Friendly Press, Fox News Radio, wanted to find out more about these ballots that were found floating in a river. And it calls up either the Talking Heads or perhaps Vestal Goodman and the Happy Goodman family singing "There Is a River." There's a river. There's a river. So for your just for your
And the Horn Family Community Congregation's listening pleasure, Kaylee Maganini, There Is a River.
A reality, yes.
Thank you, Kelly. As you know, the president has criticized the mail-in voting process quite a bit over the last few weeks. The other day, he said they found a lot of ballots in a river. Who is they?
What the president was referring to are something that we've seen just in the last 7 days, where in Wisconsin, there were trails of May ending up in a ditch. That's, I believe, the specific he was referring to, and that included absentee ballots.
We're specifically, in this particular statement, though, who is they that found those ballots, and where is this river anywhere in this country?
The local authorities. It was a ditch in Wisconsin that they were found, and I can get the article to your inbox.
Wait, you got that? I know the audio's kind of low.
No, I heard it.
Where is this river anywhere in America? Well, it was a ditch in Wisconsin.
I'm going to lay my ballots down by the river
side. Down by the ditch side. Down by the ditch side. I mean, that reminds me of the old gag about... Do you know about the Great Wall of China? No, but I know a big fence in Chicago.
Yeah, that, I'm telling you.
But let it continue, because it just gets better.
Go ahead.
It was a ditch in Wisconsin. That's almost, I mean, it's a pity it came out of her mouth, because that's one of those memes you see on social media where someone will tweet, narrator, Morgan Freeman voice, it was, in fact, a ditch in Wisconsin. Ditch in Wisconsin.
If he misspoke, that's fine.
No, that's what the president was referring to. And you're missing the forest for the trees here. The point is...
No, I cover the news, and I like to report accurately in the news. And when the president says they found a lot of ballots in a river, I simply want to know where the river is.
No, you simply want to ignore the fact of the matter. Again,
I got asked so many questions about this in my Fox affiliates. Where is this river?
Allow me to respond.
I can't give them accurate information, and that's why I'm asking you.
This is what is happening here. You are ignoring the problem here, which is last week in Pennsylvania, you had ballots found in a ditch. That is a fact. In Wisconsin, 7 military ballots, all marked for Trump, were found cast aside. There are problems with mass mail-in voting.
Wait, the ditch is in Pennsylvania now?
I actually don't understand the lack of curiosity in reporting on this. There used to be curiosity. In fact, the Washington Post, before President Trump highlighted the problems with mail-in voting, they said the result was an unexpected stress test of mail balloting systems when this was tried, many of which were designed to handle only a small portion of the vote and are not ready to scale up in response to the pandemic. So the media once said mail-in voting is not ready to scale up in the middle of a pandemic. Now there's no journalistic curiosity when we're finding Trump ballots cast aside. There's no journalistic curiosity when 100,000 ballots were sent out in Brooklyn.
They
were inaccurate ballots, and then 100,000 more. Lack of journalistic curiosity.
Where's the river, Kaylee?
That's curiosity.
Senator Kim Scott said the president misspoke at the debate on white supremacy. Did he misspeak? And has he spoken to
the president? When the president denounced white supremacy and said, sure, no, he did not misspeak.
Has he spoken to Senator Scott?
Yes.
Has he spoken to Senator Scott?
Yes.
Kaylee, the $1.6 trillion that the administration...
I just want to know where the river is.
Yeah. I mean, she was giving it her best Ron Ziegler. Nixon's press secretary, that poor guy, during the height of Watergate, that poor bastard, they turned him every way but loose. And she's engaging in that Trumpish word salad, thinking that a lot of words strung together haphazardly are going to constitute an answer or a response. They don't even, technically, there's not a hope in hell you're going to get an answer from these people. You're barely getting a response. You're getting fucking, you could take your Scrabble set tiles and throw them up in the air, have them land, and it would make more goddamn sense than this woman. Or could I be wrong? No, I don't think
I'm wrong. No, I think you're okay right there. Yeah.
Jesus, Bob. Does she go on? Is there more? I want to find out.
That's pretty much
it. Where's this river? Well, hopefully somebody at the next debate, or maybe Pence knows. He knows. Kamala needs to ask him where this creek is or river or whatever. Is it Pennsylvania? Is it Wisconsin? Where is it? Is it a toxic waste creek?
Take me to the river. Drop me in the water. And by the way, I thanked Jeremy Knott in Vermont for jumping in on fundraising earlier. And I want to thank Jeremy in Vermont for jumping in on fundraising this evening. Thank you both very kindly. Hey, Scott, I'm going to roll because I got Shorty on the stress line, and we're already over time, and I want to make sure that Shorty gets in, okay?
Okay, Bob, I'm glad we had this time together. I'm pulling my ear, and you and the Horn family, be safe, and 32 days, people, behave accordingly.
Exactly. And we got to protect my ongoing non-addiction. And the nicotine yuckiness seems to have passed. So if anybody was worrying, that's a good thing.
Okay, man. Take care.
All right. See ya. Later.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott in San Diego. And hey, Shorty, how are you, dear?
Hey, sweetie. How are you?
Well, the nicotine creepiness passed, so I think I'll be all right. And just, you know, hanging on to the remaining shredded vestiges of my sanity.
Well, creation woke you up, right? And creation tells everybody the same thing. Go pee. And if we can't pee, we're in the hospital. So there you have it.
that really boils it down to some fairly simple dynamics, and I think you're entirely correct.
Yes. So, did you see my email about the prolonged stress?
Yes.
Prolonging things? Yeah, so we're not going to prolong this, okay? So, this is conversation, and I'm paying for tomorrow as soon as I hang up. So, we have a free whatever. So, I don't know if you read it or not, but what happened with Sabrina on the side, okay? Chrissy Teigen lost her baby. Her and John Legend lost the baby.
That was so sad.
Picture after. Yes, but they crammed on her, you know? And, you know, people handle things in certain ways. Like my father, my brother had his brain tumor. My brother died in 2004, but he lived for a long time. Anywho, my father said, what, you chickened out? Oh, you canceled the surgery? Because people handle things a certain way. So there's no thought about her or what she's going through. That's the best way she did what she did. She'll never see that child again, right?
Right.
So you're going through what you're going through. And so the first thing I had to tell you was, you know, you went to go pee. You know.
Exactly.
And I had to hear you laugh. So I had to hear, that's my goal, to make you laugh. So for everybody who's around everybody, we can't talk about things. You have to prolong things, right?
Yeah.
And prolonged stress, if left untreated, equals a distress. And prolonged distress, if left untreated, equals a sort of a diseasement. When you leave a diseasement left untreated, you get a disease. And everybody knows if an untreated disease is left untreated, there's death. So what we do as people, we have the horn, okay? Conversation from West by God and hopefully tomorrow with Africa. Fuck all of them, okay? Okay?
Yep.
Just keep on talking, doing what you're doing, okay? Because language does for the speaker what the speaker intends for it to do. And my language for you is if you have to put some loud music on or go tell somebody, you know, kiss your butt, give me some health care, whatever you have to do, you just do it. You know, beyond
all
of that.
I've been trying for a long time, Shorty. It's.
But see, we know the deal is about you trying. You wake up and you pee. That's automatic.
Yeah.
Because if you can't pee, sweetie, you ain't got to deal with COVID. You're in the hospital. Hopefully without COVID, you know. So, you know, I'm putting my hand on my left shoulder, my arm on my right shoulder, and imagine you're in the middle, you know, and I'm hugging you.
Oh, thank you.
You know, because you know what? People handle things in a certain way. We've got all this stuff going on, and we're sitting here with a cup of scotch and a cup of bourbon or whatever, and everything's going on, and we're laughing. And I go, hey, well, let's talk about what happened with so-and-so today. The girl got raped in India. Oh. Excuse me, another drink, bartender, and you keep avoiding it, okay? So we're sitting watching the game, and we're high-fiving. A commercial comes on. Hey, man, did you hear about that kid that got shot by the cop? Oh, man, I'll be right back. I got to go to the bathroom. Keep on prolonging stuff, okay? See how we get, see what happens, okay? I mean, we're all talking about this mother and badgering women and stuff. You know, well, the mother really has the last word, you know? And it's like, hello, goodbye, whatever, kiss, you know, when you... When George Floyd went out there, what do you say, mama, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's just say mama. We're right here on a big, giant mother right now. We're here in an atmosphere, in an environment that's a globe and it's a circle, and it's spinning around. Yet we don't fall down when we walk, right?
Yeah.
But that mother is called Earth, and it still has a sack of water. Okay? We're surrounded by water. So all we have to do is just say, hey, you know who we are, know where we are, and no matter who you are, wherever you are in the whole family, make sure you have crazy glue on the bottom of your feet, virtually. That way no one can ever take you off your spot. See? And when you're taken off your spot, you get stressed. You know, whatever you have to do, you know, if you have to say, Agnes, I hope you're listening because this is your thing today. And Agnes, I'm begging you, please sing to Bob. Did you smile when I said that?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
See? And exactly. See, we have thorn in the side, but there's therapy for that. Okay? And I don't care. I mean, I do care. My point is we cannot weave thorn in the side. Okay? But sometimes a side is like that part. No,
right. You need a good pair of tweezers or pliers and yank that little bastard out.
And sometimes the mirror you can't see through. Sometimes you need another person.
Exactly.
I didn't get here by myself. I was, and by the way, about the birth begins at. Okay, I was born September 11th, 1961. Yada yada. We don't talk about that. But okay, so if my birth on my tombstone says 1961 in whatever year. Is that wrong? If birth, life begins at a certain, that's a joke, sir.
Oh, no, I get it. You know, if it begins at fertilization, it depends on what time of year, because, I mean, I guess if it begins at fertilization, my birthday is the same
at 9 months?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that I'm the result of birthday sex.
Well, see, I was supposed to be born in November.
And that was 1962.
Okay. Aww. Tattletale. But I was supposed to be born in November. And because my grandmother, who had my same name, passed away of breast cancer. So I was born in September. So I'm trying to figure this out. So I have to count 9 months back? Let's say January?
Yeah, that's what you get when you start messing around with these theocratic Looney Tunes, Shorty. They're just crazy.
So do I have to do your math and carry the one and have a remainder, huh?
Right, and multiply by 12, the 0.72, or by pi or something. Mm-hmm. That God only knows what you wind up with.
I know. But you know, the reason I'm doing this is so that I make sure that the words that I hear coming out of your mouth are the same words are going in my ear, but I want to hear how you sound. Okay?
Okay.
Because I want to make sure that you're okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, you know, like what I was reaching out for, I just thought would probably be good from a therapeutic standpoint, from a prophylactic standpoint, just trying to be proactive with it all. And, you know, my jaw kind of dropped when they said, you know, $400 for the first session and $300 for each additional. It's like, well, yeah. Now I understand why West Virginia has the mental health problems it has.
Well, the first thing that made me think was when you said in cash, they don't want a paper trail or what?
Oh, that, no, I mean, cash, check, but they want it before the session starts. Credit card, you know, whatever it is, they'll take it, but they want it up front. And the thing is, And there are so many people in similar circumstances. I'm uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
But even if I had me some Affordable Care Act coverage like we have in West Virginia, it would come with a $10,000 deductible, so I'd still be writing that $400 check and then that $300 until I got up to $10,000, and then they'd cover maybe 60% or something. That's how fucked up all of this is, Shorty.
But you know what? You made me think about something. You know, I spent most of my years overseas, you know, and I only came back for, you know, whatever, when the idea of did what they did. We don't talk about that. But anywho, to save, you know, on letters that took 2 weeks to get there and yada, 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 I would, back in cassette tapes, I would record, take my microphone, raise the DJ, and put the microphone in and record these cassettes, and then turn it into reel-to-reel, you know, right? So I would be like, okay, I wonder how I sound, all right? And I would play it back. You know, something bothered me or whatever. It wasn't until, like, I left, like, I went from Japan to England. I was like, wow, that's crazy. And so it wasn't until I found the old tape that I decided not to send to the family. And I listened to it, and I thought, wow, this is therapy. You know, so I started studying that way. You know, I wanted to study for an exam. I would record my notes, you know, I'd play it back, you know. And the human being learns from recorded sound. And that's why we learn songs, you know, the words to songs and everything, because we can remember that, you know, the words to the song. We'll put my suggestion to you and for everyone who can feel like it, choose to or not to, find a way to record it. Record your thoughts. And, you know, eat something or whatever, don't like play it back right away. And then play it back. And see how you feel after it. Everything that you felt that you wanted to get off your chest today or whenever day, whatever day you choose. Just, you know, grab a microphone, have everyone do it, and record it. And then wait till hours and play it back. And then email me.
All right.
What do you think?
I think it sounds great. Shorty, you have yourself a good evening. I'm going to ring it off here and try to.
Okay, well, I got you. How much is a day? 200 a day? How much is the show tomorrow? 600?
Yeah, we'll be at 200 tomorrow.
No. Okay, well, I got you tomorrow. I'm going to do it right now.
Well, thank you, Shorty. Thank you very kindly. Tomorrow's program will be brought, Friday on the Front Porch will be brought to us by Shorty. Thank you, Shorty.
Out of tail. Smooches.
All right, later. Bye now.
Later, babe. Bye-bye.
Well, that's just wonderful. Thank you, Shorty. And, I don't know where that whole project's going to go. I don't. Just a couple of things on the way out the door, because... and thank you to Dave number 11. Why, look, here's a picture with precious Lindsey Graham and Joe Biggs of the Proud Boys. And wait, there's a picture of Senator Rick Scott of Florida with the leader of the Proud Boys in Florida. No wonder they're having such a hard time denouncing him. They're buddies. And finally this. Because let's just go ahead and get this done, taken care of. Darlene sent this along with the simple comment, Jesus, this is gross. You remember Kimberly Gargoyle? The one who gave the messed up sounding scream speech at the Con at the conclave convention, the cool kids conclave. Well, it's long been known that she was run out of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda for sexual improprieties and sexual harassment. But now we've got a little bit more detail via the reporting of Jane Mayer at the New Yorker. And it and remember, this is the Family Values Party, and of course, she's also a natural fit for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the Trump family. God, Kimberly Gargoyle was once married to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Now we understand why not, or why they aren't anymore. So it had to do with allegations of her showing dick pics to subordinates and co-workers at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. But now there are a dozen people who are describing some of the other more salacious details that resulted in her being asked to leave. And it has to do with a lawsuit, a sexual harassment complaint that was filed. Now, remember, she's the main squeeze of Trader Tot, Don Jr. Mayer writes, until now, the specific accusations against Guilfoyle, have remained largely hidden. Media reports suggested she had been accused of workplace impropriety, including displaying lewd pictures of male genitalia. But now, well, we've got some further details, as I noted. A woman hired in 2015 was assigned to work as an assistant to Kimberly Guilfoyle and another former Fox host, Eric Bolling, who also turned out to be a creeper. According to a dozen well-informed sources familiar with her complaints, the assistant alleged that Guilfoyle, her direct supervisor, subjected her frequently to degrading, abusive, and sexually inappropriate behavior. Among other things, she said that she was, frequently required to work at Guilfoyle's New York apartment while the Fox host displayed herself naked and was shown photographs of the genitalia of men with whom Guilfoyle had had sex. And it goes on to say that Guilfoyle, was incessantly and lurid about her sex life, and at one point demanded that the employee give her a bare thigh massage. And another time, other times told the woman to give in to a co-worker's demand for her to perform sex acts, and that she should sleep with wealthy and powerful men, asked her to critique her naked body, demanded that she share a room with her on business trips, required her to sleep over at her apartment, exposed herself to her, on and on and on. And then they tried to buy her off. Or Guilfoyle did. Said she'd arrange a payment for her if the woman, the complainant, would agree to lie to the lawyers from Paul Weiss Law Firm about what had happened to her. And then she threatened to expose details of her personal life. Hey. It's amazing to me that it just goes to show you the amount of money that flows into that cesspit, otherwise known as Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. This kind of shit would break another organization. And Darlene, with one more on the way out the door, LOL. One of Trump's closest aides has tested positive for the Rona. And the aide has been traveling with Trump this week in direct contact with him. Well now indeed. So that brings us to the close of the program. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in and wiping out Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you to our anonymous friend, and thank you to Gary Laborman, and thank you to Ralphs for making those matching funds available. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter what manner you choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, over at HeadOn.live, we've got brand new Malloy coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yes, indeed. Best place to listen to the Malloy program, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please remember, stay home if you can. This thing's burning up and we haven't even gotten to the second wave yet. Stay home if you can. If you can't, if you have to be out, wear your masks, wear your gloves, wash your hands. Hell, wash your gloves. Use hand sanitizer on your hands, on your gloves. It makes it, there's no such thing as too careful in all of this. Carry some hand sanitizer with you wherever you go. I do. Maintain your social distance, not just 6 feet, but the 10 feet that Paul from Parts Unknown, who should know, recommends. And for God's sakes, if some ranting woman who looks like she's blasted out of her brains on meth comes toward you saying, "Hey, look at me naked! What do you think?" Avoid that woman like the plague. Because she is. Later.